In a scary moment for Vice President Dick Cheney, he was on Air Force Two, and a small plane came towards him. This is true. Came right at them, Alex. Air Force Two had to take emergency evasive action to avoid hitting the small plane. And for a minute there, George Bush came this close to becoming acting president. Because Dick Cheney was, you know, the real president. You get
which,
it?
Which Bush are we talking about?
The second one.
The second one.
Which Bush? Cheney was W's vice president. Not John? Herbert Walker Bush's vice president. Jesus Christ, get your shit together.
Air Force Two.
Yeah, that's like the vice president's plane. Yeah. You know? Hmm. Well, that was Jay Leno in 2004.
You really had to out me with some political jokes that really made me seem like a fucking idiot.
I was thinking about this quote, and I was trying to find a quote for today, and I was like, oh, Jay Leno didn't take down George Bush with this joke, and Green Day didn't take down George Bush with American Idiot.
Dude, you're so right. Oh, my God.
I thought they were going to take him down, but he won, despite this scathing album they put out.
They made American Idiots of us all.
We'll talk about it. Here, let's just get going here. We have like a legend in our house, in my house today. Come on. The studio.
Producer Hank.
Producer Hank. And then we also have a guest. This is tonight's musical guest today. The podcast where we discuss the cultural memory and career arc of bands and artists through their late night TV show performances. Some good, some bad, always late. I'm John Hillman, and with me is my good friend, Alex Beaton.
Hi, John.
Alex, what's up?
Just chilling.
How you doing?
Yeah. I'm enjoying the weather and feeling embarrassed by my performance in the beginning of this episode.
You shouldn't.
Yeah.
You're already feeling self-conscious. We're like 2 minutes into the episode.
Yeah. No. I would
take it. We have like a while to go.
The guest, too. He's making me nervous.
I agree. It's a big one. This is like, look, we had Rory from The Impossibles on, and I still think this is the biggest guest we've ever got.
Mm-hmm.
Take that, Rory. Oh, he's blushing. Get up on mic. Ryan, gotta get up on mic if you're gonna talk.
I don't want to be I'm just like relishing in this, you thinking I'm a legend.
Well, it's just very, you know, we're gonna get into our relationship and why Ryan is here.
Yeah, like I know you guys.
Well, we do, but like, you know, we're, at least for me, we're longtime show friends.
It's true.
And so it's nice to be in an environment where we just get to shoot the shit and you have to talk to me for like 2 hours. You know,
yep.
At a show, I can pull you over and we talk, and then you have a million other people that are pulling on you because you're so beloved. And now I get to keep you in this room, and you only have to talk to me and maybe Alex for like a minute. So it's just exciting.
You don't have to. I'm a maybe.
You're a definite maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's introduce who we're talking about.
Yeah.
And let's just get into it. So I don't even have formal. Usually what I do is I have like formal copy. When I'm introducing somebody, I'll like write something down. I'll do a little bio of them and read. I have nothing today.
No.
All I'm just going to say is what we have is basically a local Boston music scene legend in the house today. He's a longtime booker at O'Brien's, now at Faces Brewery in Malden.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that Alex and I have known for a number of years. Somebody that shaped a lot of my personal life experiences in my 20s and early 30s due to the social events and scene that Ryan created.
Booked my band's first show.
Your last show.
And our last show, yeah.
Didn't know I was doing that at the time.
No, I know.
And he booked my band's last show the week COVID hit. And I think I texted you being like, are we still playing this show? And he's like, no, dude. We're not playing this show, you idiot.
Yeah, downfall of the Western world, buddy.
Ryan Agut is here, a.k.a. Ryan the Terrible.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Still.
What's up? Are you still using that?
Still using it.
Yeah. What's the origin?
I was in a really shitty punk band in high school.
Yeah.
We all had Viking names. I could not play my bass very well, so I was Ryan the Terrible at bass.
Oh, okay.
And then as I grew up, quote unquote, the bass dropped because I stopped playing bass, and it was just Ryan the Terrible.
Got it.
Jay the Milky still has Milky.
That's where that's from.
And I am very glad I didn't end up with that.
The Milky. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been excised a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just been the moniker. It's identifiable.
I
sure is.
Will say, I appreciate that on our first show that we played with you, I believe you described our band as Saves the Day with Ska Parts.
Didn't you like have that on your band? You had that like on your Bandcamp page.
Yes.
Like, as like a like
because
moniker.
We did have a ska part or two back in the day.
Back in the day.
And that description, we used to laugh all the time about like, wow, we were once a band that might be described as that. So thank you for.
Well, this is the one thing you're going to thank Ryan for.
That's
after
it.
All
that's
these
it.
Years.
And booking us 45 times at O'Brien's.
Almost to the 50.
Yeah, we mentioned that in another episode, that you were going to throw a party for Alex if he played 50 shows at O'Brien's.
So the plan was, when New Warden hit the 50th show,
yeah,
we were going to make belts, wrestling belts, and present them on stage with the wrestling belts as the champions.
Mm.
And, you know, Daryl was a big wrestling guy. I was not at the time. Now I am. But that was like,
yeah,
we loved New Warden. We wanted to do something. When they hit 50, we were going to like do wrestling belts.
That would have been awesome.
And then we made it to 45 and just walked away.
Yeah, from the fame.
You walked out of
glory. Oh, so much we walked away from.
I feel like you should still just make those belts now.
Yeah, they're expensive.
We're not doing that for a band that can't promote it. So,
yeah.
You know? But thank you, Ryan. That was...
Yes. Well, I mean, thank you, Ryan, for everything.
Oh.
And now we've gotten...
You're too kind.
Now we've gotten past us, you know, praising him up and down.
Let's talk about Green Day.
Well, not yet.
Not yet?
Oh. We're not going to talk about Green Day yet.
Okay.
We're going to have plenty of time to talk about Green Day. Let's hear, for people who don't know you, Ryan, let's hear a little bit about your own journey and musical history to the point now where you are one of the most well-known local, you know, punk rock scene bookers in the city. I know you don't want to hear that, but, you know, it's definitely true. And so let's hear just a little bit about how you got into that, why you stuck with it, what that experience has been like.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you were at O'Brien's and then you left and now you're back in Faces and doing shows across the city again. I want to hear a little bit about why that happened, but yeah, let's just hear it. Let's hear, how did you get into booking?
Explain,
you
know, yourself.
And the scene.
Well, do you want to start with how I got into punk rock stuff?
Sure. Let's start all the way at the beginning. I think you deserve that.
I think the first band that like ever got me excited about music was Pearl Jam.
Yes, this is the other band you suggested maybe doing for the show.
And my, you know, growing up, my parents, my dad liked Neil Young, James Taylor. I don't get it.
You still don't get Neil Young? Really?
You don't get Neil Young?
I get Neil Young better now than when I was a kid.
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
James Taylor.
And they would do, I would collect bootleg live performance tapes from like a shitty flea market that they would do cover songs. And it would be like Dead Boys, Germs, Black Flag.
Huh.
And I was like, this is different. But I didn't know like what it was.
Mm.
And then Green Day came around and that
radicalized you?
Flipped everything. Because then I got Kerplunk, and then I got the back catalog of Lookout Records. And then I started getting zines.
Yep.
Started, well, what's this record? What's this record? What's this record? And started going to shows. In Manchester, New Hampshire, we had a place called Cafe Savoy, which was like a little hole in the wall burger joint that had punk shows. They were all ages.
It was Charlie's.
It could not be any further from Charlie's. Yeah,
it was like a Charlie's and burgers, and they had shows. I don't know.
But it was like this older guy and his mom, and they just had a front room, and he would let punk bands play there. Shows were $5 or $6. Everybody was under 20. And it was like, this is crazy. People
so
made
like,
this happen.
Like 13.
That's very Gilman.
I was like 14.
Yeah.
And then... those shows were great. I wanted to start a band. I started a band, Impaled Milk, with Jay, and we were not good.
Impaled Milk.
So nobody would want to book us. Mm. So I would book shows at VFW halls, Knights of Columbus's, churches.
And put your band on the bill.
And put my band on the bill. So then they'd trade us
a
show.
That's a classic move, the late 90s move, yeah.
And it was really Johnny Earthquake and Joe Kelly from Zippo Raid took us under their wing when Pete and everybody in Kermit's Finger, I can't think of Ross and Eddie...
These band names are
real names? Or?
they're
we were talking about Doughboys before. It's like, you know, Chankton, Buxton. Yeah, these are not real people, but go on.
So I've got an Impaled Milk.
Yep. Yeah.
I've got a Kermit's Finger.
Got that. Zippo Raid.
Zippo Raid.
Johnny Earthquake. He's the legend.
He's still around, right?
Still around?
Yeah.
Kermit's Finger just played a show the other day.
Yeah, Kermit's Finger is actually, I love that name.
Yeah.
Keep going. So then,
you know, I would go play Lawrence Knights of Columbus that Johnny booked, or then I would go to the Art Space in Gloucester. And then when I moved to Beverly in the North Shore, I wasn't in the band as much. You know, we weren't doing a lot, so I just booked shows here and there at the Art Space and just started booking shows.
Yeah.
And that's like how it all happened.
And that, so I mean, that was probably 2005 at that point?
2005 was my first show at O'Brien's. This is, we're talking the 90s.
Oh, wow. Okay,
which is, I started booking, I think my first show was 98. Art Space was 2000.
And then you became like the primary booker at O'Brien's in 2005 or
2012.
Like... Oh, okay. So you're doing shows around the city, doing a lot of O'Brien's shows
Abbey?
Starting around then.
I booked at the Abbey. Yeah. I worked door at the Abbey.
Okay.
I had a place called Real Bar. Then it was Deep Ellum. Then it was, now it's Lone Star. But yep. Real Bar, I called it like a basement.
They did shows there?
A basement show in a bar. $2 cover, it was two bands. $3 cover, it was three bands. Nice. All drafts were $5. Even the Arrogant Bastard, which fucked up way too many people.
Was like the design of that room different the exact back
same.
Then? How would you fit a band
in that?
It was
just a long
room?
Space, it's probably band at the end, right?
At the end.
Yeah.
It's Bill's Bar style.
That yeah. seems hard.
It was fucking fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are generally the, you know, places where you kind of have to squeeze people into a weird space tends to pay dividends.
Charlie's.
Charlie's.
Yeah.
I mean, I did Plow and Stars Mondays for 4.5 years. Then I did Charlie's for 5 years. Then I did O'Brien's. Then I went back to Charlie's. Did it for a year.
Man gets around.
It was too much.
I almost forgot that you did Charlie's.
Yeah. Well, Daniel did it for 8 years. I did it for four.
Okay. Because I always think of it as Daniel's. And not, yeah.
Good.
Well, no, it's not. I just forgot. It's harder. You're all over the place. It's hard. It's hard to keep track of your booking career.
Yeah. Then I was at O'Brien's for 9.5 years, pandemic. A lot of shit changed for a lot of people, but
yeah.
I had two kids all of a sudden.
Mm.
And when they said they were going to start opening up again,
all of a sudden,
I was like, I'm not going to
do this every night.
I don't want to do this 7 nights a week.
O'Brien's, which is a 7 night a week commitment. Right?
And, yeah. I'm, you know,
but also you're a North Shore guy now.
I live in Malden.
Yeah.
But I'd lived in Malden most of the time.
Right. But I'm saying it was just easier now if you wanted to do something to do it north of the river.
Or, yeah.
You know.
And then Faces was an opportunity. I was out. I was like, I'm done booking. I'm not. Maybe I'll do a show here or there. I did pairs at OB's. And then Bob Logan at some studios kind of like was like, hey, these guys are looking to do live music over at Faces.
Mm.
I went in, I met Bob, I met Dan, Joe and Anthony, and Bob gave me like a tour of the space. Bob Martinetti is different from Bob Logan. They're the two Bobs that I work with.
The Bobs.
But the Bobs. But you know, they gave me a tour of the space. I was like, this is fucking incredible.
Yeah. So they hadn't done any shows there before you started.
They did like one blues cover band, I think.
But they opened that space with the clear intent of like, we want to have a space for bands to play in the
back.
That
was their goal.
Yeah.
And you walk in there, and I mean, they're just so hospitable. Yep. Everybody is like, the food's great. The beer is awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's just so funny, like, thinking about O'Brien. I mean, obviously, O'Brien's was our lives, your life more than ours, but also our musical life for so many years. And then you go to Faces now, it's almost like we've grown. We've had the grown up version. We've grown up into Faces.
Yeah.
You know, it's this nice bar, has this great beer list and food, and the stage setup is really beautiful, and the backdrop is beautiful. And I mean, you obviously graduated and grew up into that space, and now we get to enjoy it.
I'm very lucky to be there, and they treat me great. They treat the bands great. I mean, it's a win.
So, what are you doing? Like 4 or 5 shows a month at this point? Less?
Yeah, probably like 8.
Okay.
8 to 10. This month is light. I have 4. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's only really when I want to do it.
Yeah.
Or when it makes sense. You know, I don't want to have to. I didn't want to have to do like Tuesday night. I got to fill it with like something that's not going to be. But I get a great touring band. I get locals who I know are cool.
Yeah.
Hey, this band's been developing an audience. I can see it happening on social media. Yeah, let's give them a show. And
yep.
All of a sudden, we got 80 people in the back of the room going fucking crazy. And
yeah, and the response has been good, right? The turnouts.
It's been great.
Well, we were talking about it one night. I was there, and you were talking about, oh, it actually has become this sort of nice mix of people from the Alston O'Brien scene, like Alex and I, that'll come now and again, and also local Malton people who are showing up and creating their own little fun music night scene through you, which is really cool.
We got these two younger kids. They're in their 20s. They live walking distance. They claim they've been to 55 shows.
Hell yeah, I love that.
And I'm just like, cool. Like one night they were just like, hey, Ryan. And I was like, hey, do I know you? And they're like, oh, we just come here all the time.
We hear every band. Thanks, Ryan.
We put.
That's great, though.
And it's like they're bringing friends out. They're having a great time.
Yeah. And the kind of like Faces marriage is so nice. What's his name? Is Bob
Logan.
The dog. Anyways, he runs some studio.
Yeah.
And he is awesome. My experience with him has been like, he is just the nicest man.
It turns out we used to work together. He was in Vic Firecracker. And I booked them, I think once. I worked a door show at the Abbey. And then I booked them at O'Brien's through Jesse Sherman's Alston Awesome Day Festival.
Yeah.
And like, I think at first Bob didn't know what to make of me.
Hmm.
And a lot of people have that experience. Right?
Everybody keeps talking to me about this kid, but I don't really know this kid. And then he meets me and he's like, oh,
yeah,
we know each other. Okay.
Yeah.
We've seen each other at shows.
You know, but like Zave Ends would be practicing and be like, do you know Ryan? And Bob's like, I don't know Ryan. Me and Capri's, you got to meet Ryan.
Right.
Who's this guy that... And then we meet... Oh.
Ryan.
I get it.
You're that guy.
Oh, okay. And then, we try to give the bands opportunities to, hey, we practiced at some.
Yeah.
Let's check out. Let's get you on a show. And then they're down the street.
Yeah. That is actually an awesome little pipeline design,
I just know every time I see him, he's always like, hey, guys, how's it go? Like, he's very, personal, just a good dude. Good vibes at that.
Have you met Wally?
I don't believe so.
The pigeon?
That's inside?
That lives in some.
I saw Wally at practice on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I was like... So our practice space is right on the main hallway in some studios. And I literally was like walking in and I was like, what's that thing moving like in the air? Like, what am I looking at?
Had you never seen a bird before?
Well, I'm indoors. Okay. So my brain is not thinking there's probably like a
bird. Didn't look at this thing and be like, what is this magical animal?
No. I was just like, I just had this weird moment where I was like, what am I looking at? And it was a pigeon flying at me.
Yeah.
So that's Wally.
That's Wally. And I've got like pictures of him like on perched on my shoulder.
What?
Actually?
Okay.
So Bob rescued, there was like a hurt pigeon in the parking lot and him and Sam... Bob's partner brought Wally in and nursed him back to health. And Wally's like attached to them.
The backstory is incredible.
That is incredible.
Like when I met Wally, I'm meeting Bob at some studios and I don't really know.
Oh, you didn't know about the pigeon?
I didn't know about the pigeon. No. He may have said like, do you know about Wally? And I was like, I don't know what this. No. And
like from the Red Sox?
We're walking and Wally just comes flying and lands on Bob's shoulder.
Like mid-walk?
Like mid-walk.
Fucking like pirate parrot for a pigeon. It's like it's crazy.
And they have, he has his own room. He has his own space and it's cool.
His own room?
Yeah. He does.
Well,
damn.
Now I'm going to have to meet this pigeon.
You got to meet Wally. He's cool. I would try to find the photo.
I think that says something about what kind of person he is and what kind of operation they're running.
That a pigeon would take him so easily.
A pigeon with its own dedicated space that flies around.
So, well, let's wave one more little topic and then we'll get into Green Day.
Okay.
But I do want to hear, because this is actually adjacent to Green Day, because, you know, they come from this very famous militant scene in the Bay Area. And, you know, we're going to talk a lot about that transition and the music and what happened when they sort of sold.
We're going to see a transition through the videos.
You've hit on the point of the podcast, Ryan.
We're going to check out their career arc.
You nailed it.
Through the lens.
Of their late night TV show performances. But I do want to hear from you first on this idea of like, have you ever felt like you've been kind of like the leader of a music scene before? And like, the idea of like what it's meant to like, because for me, I can't speak for Alex, but when I showed up in my like early mid 20s and started like becoming part of the Alston music scene, it was an intimidating thing. It was an intimidating thing to go to these shows and try to fit in and try to know how to act and try to be with all these cool kids. And, you know, it was a thing of like pressure and intimidation, not to the point where like you're at Gilman Street and it's like this insane setup or whatever, but it is a little. To me, it is still adjacent. Mm. And I want to hear from you. And like, have you ever felt that like weight or pressure before? Or is it never something you've never even considered or like thought about?
No, I think there's definitely pressure to keep it cool and keep it fun. And my whole thing is like, I like to have a good time. You guys know me. I'm trying to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I don't know if leader is the right word, but like you just try to lead by example of like, being okay to each other. And
well, it's interesting too, because you don't do any gatekeeping, but you're literally keeping the gate. Do you know what I'm saying? Like there, how do you do that without, you know what I mean? Because I think you achieve it where it doesn't feel
well.
Like
it's a little different now too. You're a parent, you're older.
Of course.
Faces is a much different thing than what it was like Alston in your 20s or 30s. But and looking like, back on the Alston thing, like did it ever feel, did you ever, like you said, did it ever feel like the weight of being like, oh, I'm this dude that everybody looks to, and if someone has a bad experience, like, I feel responsible for that, or like,
yeah, I mean, that for sure.
Yeah.
You know, running a club, running a venue, running all the stuff. If somebody has a bad time and it reflects on me, and I got to figure out how to like rectify it, and you can't be shitty. Mm-hmm. And if you're shitty, people are going to hear about it. You're not going to get cool stuff. You're not going to get cool shows. You're not going to hang out with the bands you like. So it's like, don't be shitty. You can hang out.
Yeah.
That's kind of the whole thing. You know, I just did that.
And obviously there's still a lot of shitty people and you can't avoid that.
You can't, but you can do your best to.
But also you can define shitty a certain way, right? Shitty can mean your band sucks and I don't think you're cool. Shitty can also mean, are you a good person to other people? Then you're welcome.
Yeah,
right?
Right.
You know, which I think is, which is different, because some people, like maybe at Gilman, it became at some point, shitty is you're not doing what we expect you to do as a band. You're not looking the right way. Or shitty can be like,
you're an asshole.
It was more the asshole. If you're in a shitty band, quote unquote, and you're having a good time, I love that too.
Like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. You know, which I think is a very, which I think is something that you pulled off that I think maybe speaks to that a little bit.
But I think a lot of what I was doing was trying to elevate the bands. And I think you experienced this a little bit where it's like, I don't want you to just play O'Brien's every week.
No, yeah.
I want the bands that are, if they're fucking good, I want to see them on a bigger stage. I want to see them grow as a band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always try to push, you know, hey, you guys are doing really good. There's a show coming up at Great Scott. You should probably try and get on. If you want, I can help.
Yeah.
You know, Oh, the Humanity played last night and I had like this really long talk with Kevin about how, you know, they were just like, I don't know what they were doing as a band when I like started hooking up and doing shows with them, but they were just like, you like helped us out a lot. We would play these cool O'Brien shows, but then we'd be like, hey, do you think we could open that Strung Out show? And I was like, well, I didn't book it, but like, I know the guy who did. Maybe you'd be a great fit for a Strung Out show.
You did this for so many people, dude. I mean, you did that for my bands and we were nothing bands and you would still get us hooked up on cool things outside of work. I mean, like, you did this for everybody, you know, and like everyone has stories like that. So
it's fucked up to hear.
Yeah. Well, but this is very quickly. This is a good segue. What is the biggest act to ever come out of like the O'Brien's, Alston, Ryan the Terrible scene? Like, what band has like made it like the biggest that you would consider like part of like the Alston scene in like the 2000s?
I mean, it's fucking Pyle.
Yeah.
It's like, gotta be Pyle.
It's Pyle. Or Vondeboris. Like,
Speedy Ortiz, would you consider them part?
Speedy Ortiz too. I mean, they played O'Brien's like a bunch.
Yeah.
Back in the day. I've seen Pyle play to 12 people who could have.
Yeah.
Those people were fucking dialed in. And everybody in that room was like, these guys are gonna be something.
Yeah.
And then. That was me, sorry.
That's okay.
the fuck out of here.
And then when you, the last time Pyle played O'Brien's, I was like, you can't fucking do this again.
Right, right.
Because there was a line down the block of people mad at me that they couldn't get in.
Yeah. Wait, was that like 2013?
It was a Choke Up record release show for Black Coffee. I don't remember what year it was.
They opened that show?
Yeah. And I was, but I was just like, we were.
Whose idea was that?
Parley's, probably. But it was like, this just was pissing people off. They're getting mad at me.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I love you guys. Mm-hmm. And then the next show they played at Great Scott, Rick was like hanging around and I was like, hey, I'm Ryan from O'Brien's. And he was like,
dude, I know who you are.
I know you.
Fucking humble asshole.
It was so silly. But I mean, if you look at like the punk bands, I mean, Rebuilder's doing good stuff.
I was going to say Rebuilder, yeah.
Choke Up, I think, was probably the best band I think I've ever seen in my life that came out of that stuff. Mm. I can't say enough about Choke Up. Savins did some great stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, you've named plenty. You got it.
Good.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to the topic of the day now?
Yeah.
I wanted to give Ryan some time up front, and I had a good time with it, so... So we're talking about the band.
I think Ryan did too.
Yeah, I think he did. I don't know. He didn't say anything in response. He might have had a bad time. I don't fucking know.
Just laughing.
Okay. Let's talk about the band of the day. This little band called Green Day. Green Day. Weird name. What does that mean? A Green Day? I don't even know what it means.
Smoking pot.
Yeah.
Is that what it's about?
Yeah.
These kids always smoking pot these
always
days.
Smoking
in the 90s and today.
In the 90s and today.
But we have a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of history to talk about. We're going to talk about this band a lot. So I don't want to. Let's just jump into it. Ryan, you already talked about it a little bit. Talk a little bit about your personal experience with Green Day. Why, when I asked you at Faces, when we first started this podcast, I said, Ryan, you're coming on the show eventually. What band am I reserving for you? And you said either Pearl Jam or Green Day.
Yeah.
So you talked about it a little bit, but like, just lead us through your quick little personal history with Green Day.
I think it was the Longview video that fucking changed everything. And
I that was the first music video for Dookie, right? That was the first single and music video.
And I was just like, you know, it was late at night. I'm like 14, 13 or 14 and 120 minutes.
Yep.
And that song came on and it wasn't like anything else I'd ever heard. And was like, who? I thought they were British from the video.
Billy sounds like it in the first video we're going to watch.
Yeah,
today.
He's got either he's British or has a cold.
Or both.
Right.
It's
he's a sick English guy.
I mean, they're sick a lot. It's foggy and damp in London.
True.
So they get a lot of colds.
And then I bought Dookie. Then the Woodstock 99 performance, like...
94.
Woodstock 94. Did I say 99?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Fuck.
But
full stop.
That like was wait, like
did, so. Oh. I had to ask this too. Did you go to the Hat Shell?
I did not go to the Hat Shell.
I was a big question of the day. If you were at the famous, well, we can just quickly talk about it. Green Day in like the fall of '94, I think, right after Dookie explodes, right. After Woodstock '94 played at this place called the Hat Shell in Boston, which is this
free
cool
show.
Free show outdoor venue right along the Charles River, and like 75,000 people showed up, and it was like a massive riot, and they had to stop after like 20
bullets
minutes.
And Jeff Rowe has a great story from it. My buddy Fernando, like, okay. I know a lot of people who went, but
yeah.
I wasn't. I lived in New Hampshire. I wasn't coming to Boston to go to shows.
Right when you were 14 or 15.
I think I saw them at UNH around that time.
Oh, you did. Okay.
That would be the. I mean, I've seen them 4 or 5 times.
I've never seen them.
Neither have I. Yeah. I was going to say I've never seen Green Day live, which is weird.
They
but we'll talk about. Louis, what year, how old are you right now, or what year were you born?
I was 81.
Okay, so you're 4 years older than us. So that, you do get to, you know, when Dookie comes out, we're 9.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And you are 13, 14. So you get, you can start going to shows by yourself, and like. You,
oh, no. I was not allowed to go to shows until, like, all through high school.
Is that right?
What?
I mean, I.
This is like your.
And you were booking
this is like your villain origin story.
I know. I was in a band. Like,
I was gonna say what?
But so you. But you said you saw them on the Dookie era tour at UNH.
Yeah, UNH.
So with your parents, bring you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But then you got. I mean, I've seen them a handful of times. They put on a good show.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite show now. There's a lot of crowd participation and
yeah.
Also, it's like now it's we were talking about we were you know joking about going to see them in Rancid and
the Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, and I'm like,
and we were looking, and I was like, these are like $200 for like pretty bad seats. Like,
yeah, I'm not going.
I'm not going to fucking do this.
Like, yeah,
the sound will sound shitty.
I want to.
It'll sound shitty at Fenway. Like
it'll sound fine. We had tickets because they were doing the Fall Out Boy tour before the pandemic,
the Mega Hella tour,
and they canceled. They said you can get rid of your tickets, or you can keep them and go when we reschedule the show. And I was like, I'm fucking canceling the tickets. I want my $400 back or whatever. Yeah. And then they announced it was happening, and my life was so different. I was like, I do not have $400 to spend on a show anymore.
Right?
You know, we bought them when we had no kids.
Right.
I got two fucking kids. I can't. I have $400.
You're not gonna, dock rations for your kids for a couple of weeks.
Well, it's like that was Green Day, Fall Out Boy, and Weezer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And now this one is Green Day, Smashing Pumpkins, Jesus. Rancid.
That's so funny.
Linda Lindas.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I still would see Green Day now, but it's. Just
I
want to
see
setting.
Rancid right now.
Yeah, Rancid. Well, I mean, this
seen
is,
Rancid a bunch. Seen Rancid in Oakland.
I've seen. Ooh,
which
nice.
Is fuck. Which was fucking crazy.
Well, a lot
lots of head,
you know,
head tattoos, yeah. Spider web kind of things.
A lot of parallels between Green Day and Rancid.
We
obviously.
Can. Yeah, we can.
Alex, very quickly, your personal experience.
First tape I ever bought was Dookie. Mm. Very distinct memory of buying the Dookie tape when I was in P-Town with my family. Anyways, and then, so I loved that. Also loved the Longview video, which I think, would they asked the directors to just make them look terrible. They're like, we want to look bad.
They did.
Yeah, I just remember really liking Dookie, and then I really liked, what's it called?
Insomniac,
there we go. I almost called it Brainstorm. I was like, that's not the name of that.
It's the name of the song.
And yeah, and then at some point, like you were saying, where they got huge right as I was getting into like punkier things, so
they got huge when you were 9,
I guess. That's true. but like their version, you know, when they got to like Warning and all these kind of things where you get ballads,
yeah.
Them making rock operas,
but I mean that thing is like that, well, we're going to talk about it, but that is when they weren't very popular. So it's not even that they were super huge and you thought they were lame. It's also they were kind of left the cultural conversation,
yes,
and they were also, yes, sort of lame at the same,
yeah,
time.
Yeah, but Warning is a fucking great record.
They just
I'm saying we're not going to talk about it a lot, but I do want to. We'll get to it. I want to hear from
But that's
on
like,
that.
Yeah, I just think I like them when I was really getting into music. I like when I come around was like on the radio, like pop radio, and then for whatever reason, I identified that as like that's the kind of music I'm going to like when I grow up.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of
you don't need to make that voice. You
know, well, that I did. Like, I did. Like, so
you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Should I do my thing and then we can go on?
Yeah.
Okay. So for me,
fuck off.
You know, I think Dookie, I must have bought it pretty young, 10, 11. I definitely listened to it at that point in that sort of era of when I was listening to Jagged Little Pill and Tragic Kingdom.
yes. I had all those records.
You know, and then
there was some Hootie and the Blowfish
but
happening.
I think it
for
is
me.
One of the rare records for me where, like, you know, a lot of times on the show I'll be like, oh, I listened to something at that age and then I gave it up and then I returned to it. And this one I think I just never stopped listening to.
Right.
I never stopped listening to Dookie, whatever era classic rock snobbery I was in. I was always listening to Dookie from 10 to...
Dookie is hard to deny.
It is. Yeah. And then I think, you know, I really got into Insomniac. Nimrod, I think I definitely had, but I had to be more of an adult to get into Nimrod, I think.
Yeah.
And then Warning, even though Ryan isn't going to like this, I never liked Warning.
It's okay.
Still don't particularly like Warning. And then we're going to talk about very quickly... Or not very quickly, in like an hour and a half. I didn't realize this. I must have listened to American Idiot a lot. A lot. Because when I re-listened to it the past couple weeks for this episode, I was like, I know every lyric. I know every trick. I know every song in this, even though I haven't listened to this in like 15 years.
Oh, interesting.
When it came out, I must have. And there's a couple songs on that I love to this day.
Yeah.
But like even like the weird ballady ones that like the we are like that one. I was like,
I hate that song.
Yeah. I was like, but
I almost
like,
finished
I know
it with the Youth of the Nation, which is a POD song.
But yeah, I realized man, I must have really been into that record because I know every little trick on it, and I haven't listened to it in like a decade until this.
So it was 2004.
Yes.
Yeah. I do remember that was like all over the fucking place when I was in college.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, I remember Kenny had at some point in some MySpace or Facebook profile was Wake Me Up When September Ends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and I was like, yeah, great. Perfect.
It's like a Harris Whittles joke. Okay. So let's quickly get into the history of the band. Mm-hmm. And then we can actually do the exercise of watching these clips. And then we can let Ryan go on with being a great guy and a father. And he can get out of here. He's already been here for too long. All right. So very quickly, I did read one of like, you know, the biographies this week that led up to like 2004 or something like that. Not super in depth, but it had enough stuff. I like these books mostly just for the shit before the clips.
Yeah.
Once you get past into their career, it becomes very superficial.
Right.
But I like the shit about like his childhood and stuff that I didn't know about.
Totally.
So very quickly, Billy's dad was a gigging drummer. Didn't know this. And Billy learned to play drum set at a young age. He first played drums because his dad was a drummer. So he would like fuck around on his dad's drum set as like a kid. And there's a story about a musical teacher recalls Billy singing. He's got the whole world in his hands when he's like 6 years old. And the music teacher was like, he had the ability to move and change keys and like sing in perfect pitch as this like 6 year old. And it like fucked me up. You know, and we have another story like this. You know who it reminds me of is Aretha Franklin. I'm telling you, there's some Billy and Aretha parallels here. Like these like musical savant things. He just rolled out of bed and like could sing perfect pitch. And also Billy had a parent die as a kid. He was 10 and with his dad died.
Oh, okay.
And he was the youngest sibling. And so that like fucked him up and he kind of fell into music hard to escape this like tragedy and pain of his dad dying. He becomes obsessed with Beatles records and start writing his own songs at age 11. He's already writing songs at 11 years old. And they talk a lot about when him and Mike Pritchard, better well known as Mike Dirnt. You know how he got his name Dirnt? Do you know this? He would walk around playing like air bass and mimic the noise of what a bass sounds like.
That's so stupid.
It's really dumb. But it stuck. And so, yeah, they became instant friends in middle school. And like Mike turns Billy on to like Judas Priest and like Iron Maiden. And because Billy's much more like a Beatles kid. And like Mike's, and Mike's like, and he actually also talks about loving Van Halen. He was super into Van Halen, Billy Joe Armstrong. And so it was like Beatles, Van Halen, Judas Priest, and like Iron Maiden. This was like the milieu of what Mike and Billy were like into. I'm
trying to process that a little bit, yeah.
Kind of makes sense.
I can.
It comes out later.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, right. The bigger arena.
Yeah, exactly.
Vibes. He talks about going to see an REM show with his sister in 1985.
Oh.
In Santa Cruz, that really opened him up. It was the Fables of Reconstruction
tour. Yeah, nice.
The Fables of Reconstruction tour.
Oh, shit.
You fucked up.
Fucked up.
And he gets super into like college rock and like the punk scene because of this and like his sister.
Yep.
And then the Gilman thing starts happening and they start going to
Gilman. Yeah, because that's only 2 years before Operation Ivy.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Right. So, Ryan, what's your Gilman take or your Gilman? How is that sort of factored into your music fandom? Did you ever get super into all the Gilman bands and the history of that?
You were really into that stuff, right?
Really into it.
Yeah.
What do you want to say about it?
I love Gilman Street. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I lived in California for a year. I went to Gilman Street all the time. It's a great place. It's the politics of it didn't affect me. I know there's some weird stuff happening, but... The bands that fucking came out of it, those are the bands that I like listen to still all the time, but like the weird ones too, like Isocracy, Schlong.
Schlong, I mean, yeah.
Like, I love how weird
I'm gonna isolate that, Alex, by the way.
Schlong, yeah. Dave Mello, right?
From Dave Mello.
Yeah, and the West Side Story. Yeah.
It's the best. I love that. I think Catherine says that's the least favorite record I own.
Of hers?
She's just like, when you put that record on, I want to fucking leave the house. And it's like one of my favorite records, so it's on fairly often, but you know.
A little stress test for the relationship, I like it.
We're nice. Good, it's good.
I know you are.
there is a lot of great quotes from Courtney Love in this Green Day book.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why, but I think her just, you know.
Was she around?
She was around, and yeah, she was in the Bay Area when the Gilman scene was first starting.
Yeah.
And she did have this quote. It was dirty. It was skanky. Too much panhandling for me. No place for girls. No place for the kind of boys I liked. The stench of beer. The smell of the speed labs and the little alleys. I can't even go to San Francisco now because it reminds me of that. She has a lot of funny quotes, too, about Billy. And she's actually a nice little character in this book.
Hmm.
But she does talk about the fact that, like, yeah, I was like a punk chick in trying to be in the Gilman scene and did not feel kind of welcome.
That's weird.
Politics of it.
It's kind of a welcoming.
I know.
That's I was going to say.
I don't know. If she just did not.
Well, I think there's an edge maybe to Courtney Love that is like not present in. Gilman was like kind of silly from what I had.
It was silly, but it was also fucking hard too.
There was like all this stuff around the, you know, it's like going to like a Democratic, like socialist meeting now, the way they describe it. Like a lot of like voting rules.
Yeah,
a
totally.
Lot of, you know, there's this thing about Billy and Mike start doing security at Gilman shows, and they had, quote, eventually a non-coercive security method was proposed. If someone started trouble, the security patrol people would place their own hands behind their backs and in mass nudge the troublemaker out of the club with their bellies.
See, that's silly.
You ever have a bouncer try to do that?
See, that is silly.
At OB's, Ryan?
No.
Yeah.
No, we would.
Did you just sort of throw someone out?
We just fucking kick them out.
Yeah. Like, yeah, there was all this kind of, you know, I mean, you know.
Well, I just,
annoying leftist shit, even though we're all fucking leftists here. Like, but, you read that kind of shit, just like, throw someone out of the fucking club. It's fine, you know?
But I think that was part of it, though. They were trying to push it a little bit into, you know, I don't know. It seems a little overboard now, but I think at the time it was like very the opposite of how people behaved in punk circles.
Sure.
Right?
That's what they were responding to,
yeah,
at least. They play their first show as Sweet Children.
Yep.
And opening for Neuroses, Alex. You know, yeah. Thanksgiving 1988. Playing That's covers of My Generation and Johnny B. Good.
I mean, those are on.
Yeah.
Oh, My Generation's on Kerplunk.
No. Right. No, the
Slap Happy.
Yeah.
He said,
I should have known that.
Yeah, you fucked up. Jeff Ott, compared with a lot of bands, they sort of made an instant name for themselves because everyone was surprised at how young they were and because their music was on the polished side.
Yeah.
They sang harmonies, which was totally unusual. And
right.
Sergei Lubakov of Sam I Am said, I thought they sounded like REO Speedwagon.
Ryan, did you just book a Sam I Am show?
Yeah, I just got with Sergey. It was great. They were fucking unbelievable.
There you go. That's crazy.
They said it was their favorite Boston show.
What?
Wow. I'm still like over the moon about it.
Hell yeah.
When was that?
Thursday.
Oh, it was a couple days ago, yeah.
Well, that's weird timing. So yeah, and then eventually the big thing here is that Trey finally joins the band, and that kind of like
Right.
Everything clicks into place once Trey joins. Did you know what his real name is? Did anyone, you guys know this?
I fucking used to.
Frank Wright.
What?
Frank Edwin Wright.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? I didn't know that until I fucking did research. I was like, his name is Frank Wright?
I can see why.
Lines of Planes?
Yeah.
And it was funny. They just talk about how Billy and Mike always came across as a little more serious and quiet before Trey joined the band.
Yeah, I mean, Trey's like a cartoon character, so.
You can see it in these clips.
Sure, yeah, can. You sure can.
We're going to get into it in a second.
What is the quote that I, is it the Bay Area documentary where someone's like, yeah, you would go to a Green Day show and just every song was like, what? Huh? Another one? Like, and like, I just the idea of seeing them around this time in like 1990, 91, 92, where they're just like casually dropping When I Come Around and stuff like that, where you're like, every new song is like incredible. The hookiest thing I've ever heard. Yeah. Yeah. I bet that would have been cool to see them on the way up.
They put out Kerplunk in January of 92 or around then. And it sells 10,000 copies like right away.
Day one.
Yeah, right away. Day one, 10,000 copies.
Which they is said, insane.
They said, you know, the guy who ran Lookout was like, oh yeah, the Op Ivy LP took a whole year to sell its first 2,000. That was our biggest seller.
Right.
Up to that point. And then it sells 10,000 copies on like the first day it's out, which is crazy.
And they didn't have any radio play at that point.
No, but they started getting like college radio stuff. Yeah. Pretty. But yeah, so like Kerplunk, Ryan, important record for you.
Great record.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't want to say it's better than Dookie, but it's, you see where Dookie.
You shouldn't say that.
Yeah,
probably.
You definitely don't say that.
But you see, like, that's where the magic first, I think, came out. Like the first stuff was kids playing music and the songs are catchy, but they're not fully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then with Kerplunk, it's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Well, I was also listening to Kerplunk this week, and I was like, you can hear a lot of the Dookie tricks, like Billy's Dookie tricks on Kerplunk.
Totally.
I was like, oh, that melody line sounds like something.
Well, some of the songs, yeah.
Welcome to Paradise sounds like Welcome to Paradise. I'm not saying that, Alex. I'm saying when you listen to some song at Kerplunk, you're like, oh, that sounds like the melody in like She or something.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah, yeah.
You know, you can feel he like has his like tricks ready to go.
Yeah.
But then they become fucking sellout assholes. And ruin their entire career.
They just became them all of a sudden.
No, but then, you know, there's all these things about them going to maybe leaving and then going to Warner Brothers, and they do it. And this, you know, becomes the biggest, you know, sort of inflection point and like sellout thing ever in the Gilman scene history.
Yeah.
And people fucking, you know, start putting out zines, ripping them and writing all these stories about them and putting up banners that say fuck Green Day, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
It becomes this whole fucking thing.
Green Day did it right though, where they were just like, yep, here we go.
Yeah.
There was the Comet Bus split where he was there like roadie forever, and then they got, he's like, I'm out.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's a great, he did a Comet Bus when he mended that relationship and went on tour. It was Green Day in China. And he went and roadied for them for the first time.
We're talking about Aaron Comet Bus.
He runs the Comet Bus zine and is in a bunch of bands.
Yeah.
But like that zine is awesome. And it's,
I think he defines a lot of the Gilman Street's approach, right? In his writing, maybe entirely.
Yeah, I would say. But like he talks about how like when they started getting, like he was eating peanut butter sandwiches and like they're going and getting like nice meals. And he was like, just, I'm never going to get the nice meal. I'm going to eat the peanut butter sandwich in the fucking van.
Right.
And he's like, what was I doing? Like, I should have just gone and had the nice meal.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. So there's this other quote from Courtney Love that, speaking to this very quickly, she says, fuck the 90s for that shit. Rule schmools. Fuck that. I mean, fuck it. Having to live through the 90s and live through these crass rules. Anti-successful, anti-brand, anti-consumer. There's no level of credit. Your credibility should come from your lifestyle, your wholesomeness, all of which Billy has abided by very well. I mean, you know, some truth to that, you know. I mean, obviously Courtney Love experienced her own incredible fucked up life and has a little bit of removed from all that sort of discussion, but still, like, we have talked about the fact that
it was over the top.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I don't even own a TV, man. Like, when was the last time you heard anybody say that? Like,
right.
How many times you hear it from punks in the 90s?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was, yeah.
All right, so
I don't even own a TV. Yeah. Okay.
All right, good. I got one. I watch The Simpsons all the time.
You know who said that? Harvey Danger.
Yeah,
I don't even.
You're right.
Don't even own a TV.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this first clip, and then we can quickly talk about the impact of Dookie. So they put out Dookie, and it's quite popular. It's quite a little popular record. It peaks at number 2 on the Billboard 200.
It's fucking crazy.
Reaching top 5 position in several other countries. It's sold over 20 million copies worldwide at this point.
It's so funny to say it didn't even reach number 1. And it sold... It was diamond in the U.S.
Number 1 in my heart, though.
Yeah.
Sure is. You know, it's ranked, obviously, as one of the greatest punk records of all time on every single list you'd ever look at. Blah,
it's
blah,
the
blah.
Year punk broke was Dookie.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about how... You know, this comes out right when Kurt Cobain dies.
Right.
People are kind of, you know, and there's a lot of stuff about it, which makes sense about all of us being, well, we're younger than you, Ryan. But like, there was all this talk about like, you know, there was a lot of 9-year-olds showing up at the Dookie era tour. You know, like they were able like to connect with kids in a different way. We're like, Nirvana's this angsty thing.
Yeah.
I don't understand, you know, teenage or early 20s angst. I get it. I can understand the Longview video, and these guys are having fun.
It's
you know?
Goofy. It's a little goofy.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's like serious but playful.
Yep. Yes.
Yep.
And so let's talk about that playfulness and watch them do it on screen. On March 17th, 1994, we're going to watch them do Welcome to Paradise on the Jon Stewart Show.
Yeah.
And this is something that's going to come up a couple times here. This isn't even the first single. The first single is Longview, then Basket Case, then Welcome to Paradise.
Yeah, they just
I'm not sure why they're doing Welcome to Paradise.
Then When I Come Around.
Right. And there's like, there could be like, the whole
bang,
record,
bang, 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 bang.
The whole record is like singles, right?
Yeah, basically.
But it is a little strange. I don't know why they're doing Welcome to Paradise in March 94 at this point.
Country in a bookmobile, kicking butt all over the country, here to perform Welcome to Paradise from their album Dookie. This is Green Day.
We see Jon Stewart with guest Elle McPherson.
And he
mispronounces her name at the end.
he looks, Jon Stewart looks like feels awkward being next to a supermodel.
Yeah. Yeah. So he towered up there.
He holds himself weird. You could tell he's kind of like, oh, here I am next to a beautiful woman.
But yeah, so right away, you know, this is the first like, look we're getting at the band today. Mike with like... The head slap bangs to begin here. Yeah. In kind of like a workman's outfit, like a bowling shirt.
And like the mop top.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. The mop top on Mike.
This is the beginning of his 90s fits that we get to see.
Oh.
Which the work shirt.
He's got some good ones,
though. The work shirt is a very 90s fit.
Yes. But Billy pretty unassuming. Looks like looks like Billy Joe Armstrong, right? I mean.
But he looks like a dude you know.
He's got a nose ring, which is cool.
They didn't look like rock stars. They didn't look like...
Yeah.
You know, even like the grunge stuff, they had like an imposing look to them. But then you see this and you're like, this looks like kids like go to school with.
Yeah, this guy totally. In middle school.
Yeah,
and you're
like,
that's I think why it was so identifiable.
Those
and,
guys
like,
look like the
8th
graders. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they're just like cooler guys than I know. But like they could be the guys that I know.
Right.
They're just
And Trey is just like incredible off the bat. Dude. Just right away.
They're just the tightest three-piece of all time. Like it's they're downstrokes. They're like
yeah. I mean, we're going to talk about a lot of that. This isn't even their tightest clip of the day, obviously.
I know, which is just, it's
But it does
harmonies.
Have sort of that guitar sound right away. It does sound exactly like Green Day. That's how I imagine it in my head.
Yep.
Right away on the Jon Stewart Show in March 94, probably one of their first TV performances ever.
Yeah.
But yeah, Billy just sort of like, I love the point where like when he never finishes saying paradise. He's just like, paradise. You know, he like cuts out of the mic because he's like rocking too hard.
Well, they're just too, they're like live wires. They're literally like, I can't stop moving. Yeah. I'm fucking loving this shit, you know.
Ryan, what else? Any other reactions to Welcome to Paradise in general as a song, this performance?
It's not my favorite Green Day song, but I like it a lot. But put yourself in the shoes of like a 9 or 14 year old who's staying up late because you're going to see your favorite band.
Yeah.
We don't have the internet in 1994.
True.
So like, you don't really know what Green Day are like except what you read in magazines or you see on TV. And you see this and your brain is just like...
You can play your guitar that hard?
Look at how fucking hard he's strumming
that
thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I want to go do this. And this fucking bass part where it's like...
The bass breakdown here and then... I didn't even like Billy doing like some feedback
stuff. The breakdown is so good.
Yeah, which I didn't even realize he was doing this feedback shit at this point. It's cool. And then, of course, he's just like, dun, 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 it just sounds perfect, and he nails it.
The thing is, you know, you hear Dookie, and they got cries of like, oh, it's overproduced, or blah, blah, blah. no, this is them. Like, that's
Dookie is not fucking overproduced.
I've never heard that before.
You never heard that?
No. I mean, I have, but it's ridiculous.
I'm ignoring it if I did.
They get over. We're going to talk about overproduced fucking Green Day records. Dookie is not one of them. So,
but it's faster than the record.
Yes,
and you're like, it doesn't have to just like we didn't. I didn't know that this is what music could be.
Right,
and just see three dudes fucking crank as hard as they can, and it's faster. It's live. There's energy to it, and they're playing to people sitting down, not into it.
Right.
So, like, what is it like when there's people in that room?
Yeah,
like, I didn't totally get that. I didn't get that from other bands before. Also, the style, as you were mentioning, all of a sudden I'm wearing button-up shirts with striped t-shirts and like cutting my shorts, pants a little short so I can see the whites of my socks. So just, who didn't want to be Billy Joe?
Yeah, I mean, also the other last thing I hear is like, this is like the most like animated you'll kind of see Mike. He's a pretty, like, he doesn't go that crazy on these clips. I live, I'm sure he goes a little crazier.
He goes pretty, he's pretty good.
On these clips, he's like pretty, there are moments where he goes, but this is the first one where I was like, oh, Mike's really like, he's getting goofy and going for it. And even like on the next one on Basket Case, he's like, Mike's good, he's a little pro. Got some pro vibes to him.
He's playing a lot. This is the thing. His bass lines are like, he is consistently like a star.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just so good right out the gate.
We are going to get, this is so up to you, this was so painful. We're going to get like 30 seconds of my favorite Dookie song at the end here, which is She.
She. I was going to say, like, where's the rest of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the, you know, like Josh Terry talked about last episode. We're going to get 30 seconds
over
the credits.
A lot of times your favorite song you want to hear is the one they play for.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, like they're actually, She is never a single. You're not going to find a late night performance of She anywhere. I was like, oh fuck. They're doing She. This is incredible. But it sounds great. And Billy's voice sounds so good on these 30 seconds.
So I will say it's interesting with, you know, I feel like when I was a kid there, like the story behind some of these bands was, it's only three chords, you know? And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Maybe there's five chords. But talking about him having perfect pitch and that kind of, you know, the songwriting is just so good. Just because the songs are simple doesn't mean these guys aren't massively talented. I mean, the rhythm section carries more of the kind of like, look what we can do stuff. But even still, you know, like it's just obvious the man is like filled with talent. Like,
right away. I mean, this is the thing we'll talk about the rest of their entire career. This is my big overall take with Green Day is that even the stuff I don't like, it's not bad. None of the later era stuff that we're going to barely talk about today.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Yep. It's not anything I particularly get super into.
It's not great either.
It's not great, no. But I mean, like, if you listen to, like...
We didn't say it was good.
Whatever. Let's not talk about it yet. Okay. We're not even fucking into the second Dookie clip. Let's talk about the second clip. Let's just jump right into it. So, obviously, the album is picking up a lot of steam, and it's very, very popular. But they put out this song that I think kind of changes a lot of stuff for the band. A little song called Basket Case.
Oh.
You guys know this one?
Oh, yeah.
You know
this
song, Basket Case?
Yeah.
You heard of this one, Alex?
I do.
It's a song by Green Day. We're going to talk about it.
I remember hearing this on the radio and being confused by the lyrics because I didn't know what was up because I was like 9.
What were you confused about? You're like, what is
gender swapping that happens in some of the... And then I'm not sure what they're talking about. There's adult themes, I think, in this one.
Yeah. And it still was a song that I probably loved as a 9-year-old.
Exactly.
You know? Let's just jump right into it. June 29th, 1994. They're going to do Basket Case on David Letterman.
The beginning of a beautiful
little three-clip run we're going to have with Dave, which is great. He introduces it by saying, Time Magazine has named Dookie the best rock CD of the year.
How you doing? Our next guest's most recent album was named the best rock CD of the year by Time Magazine. I have a copy of it right here. They will be out on the big Lollapalooza tour this summer, as will I. I'll be on that tour. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to Green Day. Guys!
Hi. The song's for 80. Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything?
Time Magazine has named it the best rock CD of the year.
Trusted punk source.
As they say, we used to be a proper society.
Which is crazy. And Billy intros the song by saying this song is for Addie, which is his wife. And actually, he marries his wife, Adrian Nessler, 3 days after this performance.
Oh.
And finds out she's pregnant the day after the wedding. And we're going to talk a little bit, I think, about how crazy it is that Billy Joe's life changes like that so quickly.
At this moment.
At this moment, yes.
Jesus, yeah.
But yeah, so we're watching Billy here. Now he's got some bleach blonde hair. I guess, is this the classic Billy Joe look you would think in your brain? Like for, you know, because this is like the Dookie look, right?
He had a different hair color like every time he showed up on TV. And
for some reason, I always think about the bleach blonde hair look. I don't know why.
Mike Dern's got second 90s fit with the
Screech and Weasel t-shirt.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
With the long sleeve under a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah, classic. The pace here at the beginning is really something. It's kind of like right in the zone. It is a little slower. And then Trey comes in and it's like, oh, okay, we're off.
Yeah.
Like they can like not keep. Like,
also, Trey's particularly animated in this. He looks like Animal. Like,
yeah, he does.
But green hair.
He sort of looks like that in most of them. It's just like a blur of.
He really.
Well, that the
like super high yes, swings. Yes, where yes. I'm like, dude, you're making
and what
it
is
hard.
This? Why is there fishing?
Yeah, so we have to talk about this. So yeah, 140,
this is gotta be a callback.
At 140, it's the line versus the whore line. And I don't know if there's some connection.
I was wondering
to
about
that.
If that was an editing they didn't want to see his
but
his
I
mouth
think you
make
do
the...
see it if you watch it. I'm not sure, but obviously it's some comedy bit Letterman had before, and it cuts to them fishing right. or something, which I never have seen in any of these clips before. You're going to interrupt this iconic performance of Basket Case with this. It was weird. Ryan, please. What was your reaction to watching this?
Didn't really have much of a reaction to this one.
Go on.
So I was going to talk about. The SNL.
Oh, yes. This is when you want to. We have to finish talking about this clip first, then.
But it's the bleach blonde hair. And okay. When I saw this, I was like, God, I wish I was watching this. So I watched the SNL one again.
Yeah.
But it's like that is.
Yeah, you could have pitched us to do the SNL one.
No, I wanted to surprise you and take you off topic.
I mean, I will say. Yeah, go ahead. What?
It's the way he's strumming. It's the way Trey's playing. It's the way, like, again, it's just fucking cool. But that's. I just,
Trey, it is just a cartoon. Yeah, I agree. This one's not as tight as Welcome Paradise, like performance-wise, but I mean, Billy Joe's guitar sounds so huge.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
We also just get, like, the thing we're going to get the rest of the career here, the non, like, solo power chord solo.
Yes.
That just is Billy Joe's, like, thing. And how does it always work? It always works. You're never bored with him just playing power chords for a solo,
say,
and it
know,
just rules every time.
Where this could have been a boring thing in other bands' hands, he does... rhythm player as lead better than most, you know?
Right, and it's still just power chords.
Yeah.
And it always just rules. And so this is the first instance here we get of Trey running off the Letterman stage.
Yep.
This is going to be a running theme here of Trey fucking with Letterman.
Yep. Which I love.
It's just runs off stage. Letterman's like, where'd he go?
Which I just, the Trey Cool and Letterman, like,
yes,
at each other.
It's almost why I had to do this one instead of SNL, because I needed to, like, get the Trey Cool Letterman vibe going. We could talk about, because it's so funny. But fine, let's talk about the SNL performance.
Once again, Green Day!
The one thing I wanted to say about the SNL one
was it was take two things,
like a year after Dookie came out,
yeah,
and like 7 months before Insomniac came out. So they played When I Come Around, which was the single at the time, and Geek Stink Breath, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Because that song didn't come out for another 7 months,
yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
I want that song.
That's a cool move. Yeah.
And it like blew my mind at the time that they were playing a new song that wasn't on any of the records.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were playing it live a lot, but we're
pulling it up right now in real time. I haven't prepped this, but we're just going to quickly throw it on here.
Look at his fucking hair.
Look how punk his hair is. He's got a random dread. Oh my God. This is when they were feeling the sting of Gilman being like, fuck off.
Right, well, we're going to talk about that.
Well, this is the pressure of being...
Who's this guy hanging out on the amp?
No fucking clue.
Sorry, so we're watching...
Straight up punk
We're watching Geek Stink Breath on their 1994 SNL performance right now. Ryan just throwing off the structure of the show, no problem. I don't care. I'm not trying to run a tight ship or anything. It's fine, but...
I mean, the guy
Billy Joe's
like
hair, little
bands.
Strands of hair falling off there. What's going on there?
But this is also Dookie's
called
been
punk,
out.
Dude.
It's been
used to it.
So they are dealing with the pressure of being a band.
They're huge.
It's not just
they're huge now.
The Gilman stuff. It is one of the biggest bands in the world, and then they write this fucking record, and it's a little darker, a little heavier.
Yep.
And this was the first glimpse that we all got of it.
Yeah.
And it is cool. So it was just like September 94?
I think it was
August, summer?
I forgot.
Well,
I looked
summer,
it up yesterday.
It's not in the summer, but we could look it up.
It's probably somewhere. December, maybe?
Late. But yeah, they do look cool here.
I mean,
they look a little cooler than Letterman. They do. It's true. Look at Trey. God, so ridiculous.
And then he
runs off the stage
into the audience.
Oh shit! There you go. All right, we're gonna have to unofficially include this in our performances today. So that comes out. Dookie popular, good record and popular. And so, like you said, Alex,
December 94.
There you go. That makes more sense. What happens here is, like you said, Alex, they get stung by the criticism being a sellout.
Right.
Right. This is Bill. They become kind of obsessed with this, and they talk about recording Insomniac. Billy says, "I think I was just lost. I couldn't find the strength to convince myself that what I was doing was a good thing. I was in a band that was huge because it was supposed to be huge because our songs were that good. But I couldn't even feel that I was doing the right thing because it felt like I was making so many people angry."
Yeah,
is what they talk about for Insomniac.
Oh yeah, and I have an infant.
Yeah. So that was the thing I didn't really realize is that he gets married so young. They all get married so young.
How old are they at this point? 23? 24?
Something like that. Like, he's married and he has a kid, like, right away. And I don't, it does speak to, like, they still party. Obviously, Billy Joe goes up and down of sobriety and getting fucked up and all this stuff. But still, it's like, oh, he instantly was like, I need some little anchor in my life. I'm going to get married at this super young age, even though I'm one of the biggest rock stars in the world. It's kind of a crazy move.
There's a bit of like train off the tracks thing happening here, which I think actually ends up happening, right? At some point, his train does fall off the track where he's like, whoa, yeah, I got to chill out.
Yeah. But yeah, he said when they were recording it, there was a real urgency to this. And like, we needed to put out new music right away. And I was thinking about when I saw this quote around Insomniac was No Doubt. Remember how we talked about like Tragic Kingdom came out and they like took them 5 years to put out Return to Saturn. And they were like overthinking it,
labored over it,
and like Billy Joe and Mike are in charge, just basically like, we just wanted to get something out as quickly as possible,
right?
Wanted to keep the juices flowing. We knew it wasn't going to be as big as Dookie, but that's fine, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that was a great move on their part.
They just kept moving. Yeah,
I'd say it's a better record.
You think Insomniac is better than Dookie?
100%.
Wow. Let's sit in that.
I listen to them both equally, actually. I don't know. It's interesting.
I love Insomniac.
I really like Insomniac.
I love Insomniac. I can't go that far. For me personally, I just can't do it.
Dookie got me hooked, and I love the back catalog, but Insomniac is the record that solidified it and put them over. It's a heavier, darker record.
Yes.
And it fit. Maybe it's where I was a little bit older.
Yeah.
Now I'm 15. Now I've been going to punk shows. This is still... this is a great
I also feel like the guitar sound on Brain Stew like recalibrated me to like heavy music.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Brain Stew and Jaded is one song.
I'm just
you split those up, fuck you.
We're gonna talk about
that. No, you're right. No, you're right. It's important for people to like remind me of when I fuck up, you know.
I'm just saying,
we do it every episode.
Brain Stew / Jaded. That guitar sound, I remember hearing that on the radio and being like, what? How is this so heavy?
Yeah.
And I still, to this day, I feel like something about hearing just a dun-dun, like...
Dun-dun.
I don't know. It's like, there aren't many examples in my life where just the sound of an instrument really like hit me. And something about that like post-grunge guitar sound is like so big.
You know what I think it is for me, that why I can't go over the top with saying Insomniac's better? Is I think I like the non-singles on Insomniac more than the singles.
Yeah.
And for Dookie, I don't have that qualification.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I like Brain Stew. I actually like Jaded more than... Brain Stew's never really been...
They're one song, John?
They're one song.
But...
He doesn't know.
You know, what's the other one? Like, Stuck on... What's it called? Is that... What are the other singles on Insomniac?
Geek Stink Breath.
Right? Yes.
Yep. 86.
No, 86 isn't a single. we're going to talk about.
Really? Fucking should have been.
No shit. That could be the segue. That could be the segue of what we're about to do in like 2 seconds. But yeah, I just think the singles never hit for me like the singles did on Dookie. And then I really just like the non-singles on Insomniac. Like that run of 86.
Yeah.
Panic Song.
Panic Song. Forget about Panic Song.
You know. Stewart in the Avenue. That little run the record is like, oh my God, this is so good. And then the Armitage Shanks, I love that obviously. But yeah, the singles.
I think Dookie has more unique sounding songs and like the songs are more memorable between each other. Mm. I think to me, Insomniac kind of feels all of one piece and they kind of blend together a little bit, the song. So I can see why it's not as, I don't know.
The singles were Geek Stink Breath, Stuck With Me. That was the one I was trying. That's track three, which is good.
Yeah.
But it's not Dookie level memorable as a single. And then Brain Stew / Jaded is one song.
Yeah.
That's the whole name of the song now. It's parentheses. It's one song. And then Walking Contradiction.
I love that song.
Walking Contradiction.
Which, yeah. I mean, I like Walking. Yeah, I like that.
Good music video for that one.
That's where he's walking around and bad things are happening around him.
Yeah.
But yeah. But still, just a classic record. And like I said, it's the best thing is that they just went right back in the studio. They weren't fucking around. They weren't afraid of doing it. They just did it. They put it out, and they knew it wasn't going to be as big as Dookie, and they're like, it's fine.
Yep.
Obviously, the label probably didn't think it was fine, but Green Day was fine with it. I think they still had a little anxiety or insecurity about it not being as big, but whatever. I think, generally speaking, it was the anti-No Doubt thing. Where they took forever and they were freaking out.
Yeah.
It sucked. If you just put out another fucking record, you can keep your career going.
And then they did it again.
They did do it again. Yeah. Though, I mean, we'll talk about Nimrod. Let's not move on to Nimrod
quite
yet.
And over.
Because we're going to talk about a very special performance. This is easily my favorite clip of the day, personally. I've been watching this like over and over again because I like get goosebumps every time I watch it, which is November 8th, 1995. They're on Letterman again.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to do the song 86, which, like we said, wasn't even a single. Why are they doing it on Letterman? It's not a single.
I do what I want.
They're punk.
I honestly, yeah.
Yeah, John, you may not know about this.
I gotta tell you, I like these guys, this Green Day. I'm very fond of these guys, and I'm hoping to adopt them. And the first time they were on our program, they scared the hell out of me. But they since have gone on to sell millions of albums, and they've also won a Grammy. Their new CD is entitled Insomniac. Ladies and gentlemen, here they are, Green Day.
So Demi Moore in a straight up sparkled bra, just sitting next to Dave.
That's not Demi Moore, is it?
Oh, yeah. It is. Oh, that's striptease era, baby.
Yeah, that's Demi Moore. Just in this like straight
up, not wearing a shirt.
Not wearing a shirt on late night, which is cool. But yeah, the 86 isn't a single, and they're doing it anyway, and it's just cool that they're doing it.
Because
obviously this,
it's right. The fuck
so
you,
why don't
Gilman.
You explain what this song is about, Alex? Go for it. What's it about?
Well, it's about them getting blacklisted by the Gilman Street crew and saying, well, go fuck yourselves. We're good.
This performance just rips so fucking hard. I love it.
Dude, look at how in sync they are. Like,
and it's just like, I love this song. It's probably my favorite song on the record. Yeah, Billy. Now we got some hair product going.
Yes.
Some little spiky hair product on Billy Joe. Mike's looking a little classier.
Yeah.
Little suit jacket.
What did I wrote? It's like, oh, you guys got like a job interview or something? You know what I mean?
But like you said, Alex, this is one where you're like, oh my God, this is so tight. Like, they sound so tight together. Trey is unbelievable on it. It is a little quicker than the record, which is like perfect. It's not too...
Just a little bit.
Exactly. It just makes it so good. The little chugga chugga verse guitar sound from Billy is like incredible.
Yeah. Well, even when they just do the zoom out shots where you can literally just see their hands moving together in sync and you're like, oh man, you guys are like cut from the same block of wood, you know? Like,
and then like Mike's backing vox on There's No Return.
Yeah.
Like,
it's perfect. I was noticing, he's like, just the way he says it, where he doesn't say 86, just and it stops, but it works so well. It just lifts the song up.
Yeah. 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 No, the fact, like you said, that's the first thing I noted too. Doesn't say it 80 on 86. Just there's no return. It just like,
and back, and like back.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It's just like, it's so good. I don't know what to say, man. I've been watching this clip so many times this week.
Yeah. Just their hands, like, oh, God.
And like the tight one shots of Billy Joe, like on the chorus, and it just stays on him.
Yeah.
It just looks, man, it's so fucking iconic. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, it just looks so cool. And then we get another no solo power chord solo, yep. And it just rocking the fuck out so
Trey
hard.
Looks like he's about to break his drums into little pieces.
Yeah.
And the green hair matching the green drum set is.
And it's a smaller kit than we're going to see moving on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is something we see a lot.
They get bigger and sillier.
The drum sets always get bigger, dude. They always get bigger
and sillier. How many toms do you really need, my guy?
But Billy Joe, how many bands can you say you can see the guy playing the same guitar for
decades? Yeah, I was going to say.
Like, there's not another band that I know of that the guy uses the same guitar.
Yeah.
Queen.
Yeah.
Brian May. Brian May.
Brian May probably has a big collection of guitars.
Well, he's got one that built himself.
And then to keep on our little Trey theme here, the song ends. It's, you know, incredible hard stop. And then Trey jumps back behind the stage.
He jumps into water.
Into like a little like waiting pool. I don't even know that Dave had this. Oh, you know, it was an interesting note here. I didn't even see that.
This was the California set?
Yeah. I didn't even see that until the very end of the clip. Whatever. That's now we got enough fucking ad. But it said Dave Letterman in Los Angeles. I didn't even notice that until the end. I guess they had done some special run of shows in L.A., which is why they probably had a waiting pool in the back, because I don't remember that on Letterman's New York set.
It wasn't at the Ed Sullivan Theater.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Ryan. Good pull. You know the name of the theater that Dave performs at.
I remember I stayed up like the first episode I watched, like, as it was like a momentous moment in our household.
For wait, which one?
The Late Show with David Letterman.
Oh,
when he moved from whatever network
when he got the first his first CBS show.
All stayed up. It was Bill Murray was the guest, and we were just like, we're gonna stay up late, we're gonna watch fucking
were your parents like a big fan of the 12:30 Letterman show or?
No.
Why were you guys so excited for it?
Maybe my dad was, but like, I don't think they watched it religiously.
You weren't aware of the backstory.
It's just because it was such a big cultural. It's because it was a big cultural thing of like the Leno Letterman fights.
Right. Yes,
and like
yes,
we yes, are yes. not a Leno household.
We
are not a Leno podcast. In cool. this house, we celebrate Letterman.
Yeah, there you go.
Fuck yeah! And we are going to have. We will have one Leno clip today, but we have one more Letterman one.
Yeah.
But let's quickly move into the era about what we talked about, which is Nimrod.
Yeah.
The album Nimrod, which peaks at number 10 on the Billboard charts. So it's still certified platinum, but number 10 doesn't hit, you know, the heights of Dookie, but still very, very popular.
I love Nimrod.
It's where I fell off.
I like Nimrod.
Warning brought me back, but
that is insane to me, but let's move on. Like that you fell off of Nimrod and Warning. I don't know how many people have.
How do you feel about Nimrod now?
I feel Nimrod, I think it holds up. But like at the time, again, I've been now going to punker shows. I've become like a different person.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this just wasn't
the record. Yeah, but that's so funny you say that.
But it's got Platypus, I Hate You, which is like...
My take on this is like, I feel like that's a little overblown as a narrative. I listen to that record again. And yes, it's not this super punk thing, especially coming out of Insomniac. But it's still pretty fucking punky. Like, I don't know.
But like, I'm seeing the Unseen every weekend.
Yeah.
This doesn't...
Sure, right. sure. At this
you're
point
thinking
in time,
like, do I like Os Rotten or not? You know?
I fucking do. Like, right, at that exactly. age, especially.
Right. I really like The Pissed. Do I give a fuck about this band that, like, is putting strings on their songs now?
But, like, did I go buy this the first day it came out and made sure I had a copy? And then I listened to it and was like...
Fine.
It's not for me.
Yeah.
And it sucked because they were, like, the band that I was identified with more than any other band.
Yeah. Right. Up until this. That makes them, like, 16. You're the height of like
I was a 16-year-old punk man.
Gonna say you've probably got some bondage pants on and you're
bleached my own pants, like learned how to tie boots in a stupid way.
Patched
up everything I own.
Right. You probably stupid. If anything, Nimrod, you had like you probably used it as a way to be like I'm fucking cooler than this shit.
That's basically how I felt at the time.
Yeah. No, I get it.
But going back and listening to it now, it's a great record.
Yeah. There's a spin.
Nice Guys Finish Last, such a good song.
Love that song. That's the opener, right?
Yeah.
Pretty solid fucking opener. 97 Spin article quote, anyone who ever griped that Green Day weren't really punk will find confirmation here. At heart, Nimrod is a poker-faced rendition of what every band before them has done in this situation. Genre hopping, testing their boundaries in the studio, string, horns, and the works. I just think it's a little overblown. I think that narrative is a little overblown on this record.
Well, it's,
they have it, but it's not a big deal, and there's still plenty of classic Green Day shit on it. I don't.
It's not a big deal now, but if you think about anything that Green Day did before that, it's all painted with the same brush, right?
Yeah.
Like, literally, the guitar tones are the same on every single song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you go to this album, where it's like, oh, we got a horn section.
You know,
we've got all, you know, we've got these, like, pop songs.
We have a fucking ballad.
Yeah, we got an acoustic ballad.
Yeah, true.
And that, I think that, to how present that song was, and I didn't love it.
Slow dance song. Yeah.
Though, you know, we didn't mention.
Graduation video. You know
what I have to quickly mention, though? Before we move into Nimrod, one thing we didn't talk about is our boy, Jerry Bear.
Oh, Jerry Bear. Yeah.
Jerry Finn. So, Jerry Finn.
Right. Face.
No fucking clue.
You don't know who Jerry Finn is. Okay. So, he is, we've talked about it a number of times in the show. He is a 90s producer that produced, we first started talking about him with Blink, I believe.
Yeah. He did.
He did all of the classic Blink records. But this big break is mixing Dookie. He's the mixer on Dookie. And that sort of sets him off into...
Yeah.
Well, you should pull
him and Rob Cavallo do a lot of stuff together.
Yeah, well, Cavallo's the main producer. Cavallo's the main Green Day producer. But Jerry Finn is kind of like the mixer and engineer on Dookie and Insomniac. Yeah. And, you know, basically invents like the mid-90s pop punk guitar tone on Dookie. But so I wanted to mention Jerry Bear. Because the other thing we have to say right before we get to Nimrod that we didn't even talk about is... They're one of my all-time favorite Green Day songs isn't even on these records.
Oh.
J.A.R.
Oh, yeah.
And that comes out in 95.
The Angus soundtrack.
On the Angus soundtrack. And I want to just quickly talk about the Angus soundtrack. Because it's just so... Yeah. First of all, Jerry Finn, not only does Jerry Finn mix and engineer J.A.R., he also does You Gave Your Love to Me Softly by Weezer.
Great song.
Probably one of the best sounding Weezer songs ever. That's on the Angus soundtrack.
Goo Goo Dolls have that fucking...
Yes. But wait, and then on the Angus soundtrack, he also produced Ashes, Jack Names the Planets, and Kung Fu.
Okay, two fucking Ash songs.
Yeah.
It's what the fuck?
I know. I love Ash.
Me too.
They're one of my big bands in high school.
Yeah.
I loved Ash.
I was a big Ash fan.
But that's so crazy. So Jerry Finn did the Ash songs, the Green Day song, and the Weezer song on the Angus soundtrack.
Yeah.
And now like the Angus soundtrack is like...
I wouldn't have been surprised if he did like Smoking Pope song.
It's like a pop punk like legendary cred thing. If you meet another pop punk fan, you're like, oh, you own the Angus soundtrack? Like that was a huge deal, which is so strange.
Riverdale's Dance Hall Crashers.
Yeah. Just this weird... I wanted to talk about it.
Green Day brought Riverdale's on tour.
Yeah.
Like for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's weird.
So you need to... Do you have the Angus soundtrack on vinyl?
No.
Oh, you should get that. I'm going to get that.
Don't tell me what
to do. You have it?
Of course I have it.
Fuck yeah, Ryan. I knew you would.
When that came out, that song came out, AAF played it one time.
Yeah.
And they were like, we don't know anything about Angus soundtrack. Maybe it's a life pick about Angus Young. Here's the song, J.R. Really? Everyone was like, oh my God. And then the movie comes out, it was like,
yeah.
Uh-huh, not that.
Well,
no, it's not about Angus Young for AC/DC.
As a fellow chubby kid, I'd like to see representation on screen. It was great. Okay, so they come out with Nimrod, and it, like you said, it kind of gets this weird reaction, but I still think, for me, the shit I really love is like the really straight-ahead pop stuff, like Worry Rock, Scattered, that kind of shit. I really, really like it. Worry Rock was like a huge song for me. I used
redundant.
To play that like all the time. That's to me where it was a little too far for me.
Hmm.
I'm not coming to the bat. I'm just saying, Worry Rock, in those were the ones that hit the perfect little mix for me. And we're going to talk about them doing Hitchin' a Ride, which is the first single off this record. Weird fucking choice as a first single.
Great rock and roll band, and their brand new CD is called Nimrod. It's in the stores today. Here they are, Green Day. Yeah.
I really liked it because it reminded me of Brain Stew. I remember hearing it, and I was like, oh, this kind of sounds like Brain Stew. Because it's just a big guitar doing a thing.
Yeah, but they're going to watch them do it October 14th, 1997 on David Letterman. And the first thing off the bat, we get Paul. This is a big Paul song, Alex.
We needed Paul.
We got Pauly going on this one with the keys intro for what would be a violin on the record, right? And yeah, just this little like plodding little walk in the dance down the bass vibe.
I think his performance is actually really good.
Yeah.
This is before this is like the moment before they kind of go into in every direction.
Well, it's like Trey is very robotic in this part.
You know what I wrote? He looks like he's in fast motion.
What do you mean?
Like,
I see that now.
Like, it's almost like if you were to make a music video where someone plays to like a faster version of the song and then you play it in regular motion and it looks really fast. Like, he looks like he's in fast forward or something.
Yeah.
Because his movements are so jerky.
Yeah, he still have the high rising stick moves.
Yeah.
Just the ridiculous high rising stick moves by Trey. But yeah, Billy's guitar. Sounded chunky and huge, especially on the the pre-chorus. It sounds really big. We got hair products all over the place now. These guys are just producting all over the place.
I mean, they've also become just like a huge professional sounding rock band at this point. Do you know what I mean? Like this,
Seven years from now, then I feel like they really have been. But yeah, I agree. There's still a trio here.
True.
Except Paul, unofficial fourth member of Green Day. Oh, then yes, this little breakdown with Paul on the keys sounded pretty cool. But yeah, I think we get the rare sort of solo from Billy here.
Yeah, I will say this is a little bit like you're getting modern rock here, even though it's not that different from their punkier stuff. You are kind of like, okay, yeah, we're a modern rock band now, not necessarily a pop punk band.
Yeah, the chorus is still pretty pop punky, but and all the Nimrod stickers.
The sticker was a cool look.
Yeah. Did you have that on like a notebook?
No, I was...
Oh, you're right. You were too cool.
No, he was too punk.
I forgot. Ryan was too cool, like always.
Yeah.
Always ahead of the curve.
Still rocking the same guitar.
It's in every one.
It is just a weird first single, though.
I agree. What was the second single?
Good Riddance.
Oh, duh.
Oh, here comes. All right. Here we go.
And he takes off.
The Trey runs off. Falls off the set, runs off. I guess Dave, every time looking around, being like, what is going on with this guy? And then he runs back and the whole band runs off stage with him.
It's a very Wonders moment from That Thing You Do, where it's just like, cut, run.
Yeah. And then you sent me that interview with Dave Letterman recently on Colbert, where he was like, actually wanted to bring up with Colbert, like Green Day.
Yeah. Colbert was asking him like something about like, what's a moment that you'll always love or something like that. And Letterman specifically references getting Green Day on the show and like, how every time when he came on, Trey Cool would do something wild and he just loved it.
Yeah.
That was like one of his highlights of his career.
Is Trey being a maniac.
Trey being insane.
He said this on Colbert like this year or something.
Okay. Yeah. He was like, every time the drummer would just rush the desk and it just really love it. I just laughed every time.
Yeah. it's so funny. It's something like, wow, this is some weird synchronicity going on.
Yeah.
Ryan, let's quickly hear your pitch on Warning. Because we don't have a clip from it. We're not going to talk a lot about it. For me, I tried again this week. I don't know.
I think it's a solid return to form, a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go big. You can just write a solid fucking record. And I think they did.
Yeah.
And that's all I was.
I don't think you're wrong. I do think it is solid. But for me, it's just sort of like, it's hard to care about it now, listening to it. In a way, you can have all these issues with American Idiot, and we're going to talk about it. I might like it more than you guys. I don't know. But like, at least they're like, you can listen to it and be like, I can engage with this, and it's interesting. And Warning, it sounds a little like phoned in, even today, is how I feel about it. But
Warning, to me, feels like a transition record.
And it is.
Yeah.
Because that the story with this, they wrote a whole nother record. And they lost the tapes.
That was before American Idiot.
Before American Idiot.
Yeah.
Well, that's why this record I meant. Like, I was pointing to the screen.
We're not there yet.
But like, then they were just like, well, what do we just re-record the whole thing? Or
right.
And then they kind of were like, well, let's do this thing. And then it was the biggest thing they ever did.
Right.
Yep. So let's quickly move into that. So basically, they come out with Warning. It's pretty much a flop by their standards. It's a flop. And people were basically like, Green Day's done. We're not really going to worry about them too much anymore. There's a decline.
That would not have been surprising.
There's this quote from Fat Mike. They go on Warped Tour.
Just crazy.
Which is pretty
crazy to think about.
And Fat Mike has this quote where he says they were the biggest band on that tour, but it wasn't by far. They weren't super popular at that time. I think they did it because they wanted to get popular again. Warning is probably their worst album. It's what happens, the ups and downs of a band. That's what Fat Mike says about Warning.
He would know.
Yes.
He's put out some bad records.
Put out some real
stinkers over there.
But yeah, they go on the Warped Tour for them at that point, which seems crazy.
Yeah.
And then they go on tour with Blink-182.
Yeah.
Did you go to the store?
I did.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't like Blink-182.
You could still talk about the show, Ryan.
It was great. Green Day was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I just, Blink never
hit
me.
Did you stay for Blink?
No.
Oh, you didn't even stay for them?
I'm known for doing that shit. Like, I remember, like...
Except for your own shows where you stay to the bitter end every show. But
yeah.
The bitter fucking end.
Thanks for saying it that way.
I mean, it'd be my band playing at like 12:30 and you'd still be around.
It's my job.
I know.
But fun. Also, I have fun.
Yes, you do. We have a good time.
But, the backstage drama of that tour, too, where, like, Blink was coming up, and so Green Day wanted to headline, but, like, couldn't necessarily do it, so they did the...
Right.
Oh, did they switch off?
Like, yeah, it was, like, every other show.
Oh, it was one of those things, okay.
And they didn't get along.
Well, yeah, and also, Green Day very specifically paved the road that Blink-182 was riding on.
Yeah, and I think they were just, like... Blink was in their heads the hottest shit in the world, and they right. kind of were at the time.
They definitely were.
And I think they had that attitude,
yeah.
and it really rubbed
them yeah.
the wrong way.
Well, that was a little, stars meeting on different paths in the night. At that point, Green Day was on the way
stars
down.
Stars meeting it.
Shut up, Alex. Yes. They don't pay me enough to sound intelligible on
they
this
show. They
pay
you?
Exactly. Ugh. Like you said, Blink was off of Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. Yep. Green Day's coming off of Warning. Totally, Green Day's on the way down. But the way in this book they describe it is, this is a Green Day biographer, so he's biased, obviously. But he says that Green Day just blew them off the stage every single night.
That was the whole...
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Blink, not good live.
No.
Notoriously not a good live band.
No.
And then you have Green Day who, like, are fucking... You've seen how tight
they
are.
No, I know. Green Day would have... blown Blink off the stage on their worst day. Like, if everyone had COVID in Green Day, they'd still be better than Blink, than a healthy Blink.
Wow. You're finally admitting COVID's real after all these years?
I'm ready.
God, you've been on a path with your COVID denial, so this is a big moment.
Yep. That's me.
They, like Ryan said, in summer 2003, they wrote all these demos for an album technically called Cigarettes and Valentines. And the masters get like stolen from the studio. I don't know how this happens. Who steals these masters?
I actually didn't know this.
And how did they not leak? That's the...
Yeah, exactly. There's some
it's holes, like the holes in the story. It's like the Gardner painting. Yeah. Like, where is it?
We need the punk detective on this one. And so they throw it all away. There's a story where Billy Joe calls Dirt and asks him, do you want to do the band anymore? He felt secure, having become, quoted, fascinated and horrified by his reckless lifestyle. And his marriage was in jeopardy. And so they basically have this big meeting in January 2003. And they decide to, like, put it all out there. Have a big, therapy session of the band. And they settled on more musical input from Cool and Dirt with, quote, more respect and less criticism. Seems like they ended in a nice spot.
Huh. So the Dirt was criticizing Billy Joe's reckless lifestyle. Is that the idea?
Well, they might have had problems like that, but I think it was more Billy Joe was controlling.
Okay.
He was, not taking input from the other guys.
Sure.
He was obsessed with, putting everything out there in his vision, and it sounds like they came to an understanding that, like, we're going to work on this together.
If we're going to keep going, it's got to be different.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so, like, we talked about Rob Cavallo, who's, like, their longtime producer. They're trying to figure out what to do here, and he hears the Homecoming Suite from American Idiot, which is like the second, not Jesus of Suburbia, it's like the second like five-song suite. And Rob says he freaked out when he heard it. Quote, it was a song that broke the boundaries for punk rock. is how Rob describes it.
Okay.
And Billy Joe says, we started talking about doing a rock opera.
Just not really true.
All we knew is that we wanted to tie it to the political atmosphere of what was going on. We had the song American Idiot, and it was better than all of our other songs.
And stolen.
Yeah. What was the deal with that again?
It's the beginning of Double Whiskey Coke No Ice by Dillinger Four.
Yeah.
But they actually sued them, right?
Oh, yeah, successfully.
Yeah.
They did? Oh, they won that?
Yeah. I think it was settled out.
Yeah. I mean, they toured together, right? So, like, Dillinger 4 opened for them in Japan.
And they were like, hey buddy.
That sounds a lot like that song we used to play in front of you. Yeah.
I mean, Pinhead Gunpowder did a split with D4.
Right.
So they knew each other.
Yeah.
But you can't not hear it when you listen to it.
Yeah. I was going to say, once I figured that out, I was like, well, shit, now I can't hear this song ever and not think about it.
I mean, in all fairness, whatever.
It's a pretty different song. It's just the chords at the beginning.
Right, also, that song is just, it's whatever. I mean, it was a big hit, but I mean, it's not one of the better songs on the record.
Yeah, I mean, once the song gets going, it really has nothing to do with Dillinger 4, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, Alex, American Idiot... What's your experience or thoughts on?
I just remember it being everywhere. I remember liking the song American Idiot, and I liked the song Jesus of Suburbia, which I thought was a cool 9-minute thing.
Mm.
Otherwise, I found it to be like overblown.
Yeah.
Wake Me Up When September Ends was very much how I felt about it. Like, miss me on that.
Ryan?
I loved it. I don't think it's aged well now, but at the time it was like, they were my friends. I followed their whole trajectory and like they put out this risky record and there's catchy stuff on it. And Trey sings a song that's good compared to like the one on Kerplunk that is like
the country western song.
Right.
Yeah.
And I thought it was cool. I was like watching a band grow up. And I think I was over my like stupid, I'm too punk for this stuff phase. It was just like, this is a great record.
Yeah. I mean, I think I must have loved it. And I think I did. I think I listened to it a lot. I think I was super into it. I think I was really excited about it. I separated myself from the hugeness of the singles.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't care about that. Like, I didn't care about Wake Me Up When September Ends or Boulevard of Broken Dreams because, like, I didn't particularly like those songs.
Yeah.
And whatever the cultural thing around it was, I liked the songs that I liked on that record.
Right.
And the songs that I liked, I really, really liked. So, like, Letterbomb is like one of my all-time favorite Green Day songs. Like, I love that song to death. I listen to that over and over again. Like, I really liked Holiday. I really liked Jesus of Suburbia. Like, those, I was into it, you know? And then I must have, like you said, I've listened to it again. The parts of it that still work for me still work, and it's great. And the parts that haven't aged great, they haven't aged great.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like
it's very Bush era.
It's not an embarrassing record. Which I think some people look back on it now and think of it as a little embarrassing.
The next record is fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, well, we're not going to talk about
it. So I will say it's interesting. So I have a roommate who's much younger than me. I would call him a Gen Z.
You're going to go there?
I'm going to go there.
You're going to call him that?
And I was talking about Green Day with him and saying I was going to do it on the podcast and talking about their career. And basically, he could not believe that Dookie sold more than American Idiot.
I mean, it's close, but it has.
Well, I mean, like millions more Dookie has sold.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's something like 10 million in the U.S. for Dookie and like 5 or 6 for American Idiot. And it was just so interesting because if you're a certain age,
this is
Green Day.
Yeah.
This is Green Day, American Idiot, right? This is bigger than Dookie, like in terms of cultural impact, right? There's a Broadway musical. It's like, it's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was so interesting that there are two careers of Green Day.
Yes.
And if you got on board at this point, you were just, he was like, literally, he's like, when I listened to that Dookie record, I'm like, this is Green Day.
But I think like Ryan said, like, I do think culturally, this is their biggest record.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Sales don't really reflect the cultural impact of this.
Now you've got Napster.
Yep.
And so like people aren't going to buy it. They can just download it.
Yeah. BitTorrent was going off the deep end here.
I guess this was after Napster, right? 2004 Napster.
Yeah, it would have been.
But still, now it's like Kazaa, LimeWire,
Pirate Bay, that kind of shit.
MyTunes.
Yeah. MyTunes, where you're stealing from your friends at college. Yeah.
God bless MyTunes. We loved it. But yeah, it won Grammy Award for Best Rock Album. Was nominated in 6 other categories, including Album of the Year. Won a bunch of MTV Music Awards. Boulevard of Broken Dreams won a Grammy Award for Record of Year the next year. It's like Sheryl Crow.
The next year?
Yeah. Remember when Sheryl Crow did this? Like, they won, like, originally won it for Best Rock Album of the Year, and then the next year, Boulevard of Broken Dreams, because of the way the singles were released, got nominated for Record of the Year the next year, and then it won that year. So this one won Grammys at back-to-back Grammys.
Wow.
Which is crazy. It becomes the first number one album ever for the band in the United States. Selling 267,000 copies its first week.
And a full 10 years after Dookie. 11 yeah. years.
And then
which is crazy.
Yeah. But also, that seems short, doesn't it? It almost seems short. Only 10 years between Dookie and this. It, like,
there aren't a lot of bands that do that, though. There aren't a lot of bands that have records that big that far apart.
That's definitely
it's true. It's like a rare club.
And the last thing I'll complain about before we start the clip, I texted you about this on Spotify.
Oh yeah.
The way the album is on Spotify, they have it so like starting with Holiday, and then up to Wake Me Up When September Ends, they're like in suites of two songs on the tracks.
Yeah.
So if you pull it up, you like. If you want to listen to Holiday and then Boulevard of Broken Dreams,
you have to scroll through halfway through.
Let's say you want to listen to Boulevard of Broken Dreams, track four, right? You have to scroll through Holiday to get to Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
Fucked up.
It's stupid. Nah. I don't know why they did that. It's not even, the whole album connects. You can make the whole album one track if you wanted
to.
That would have sucked. but yeah, I just wanted to complain about that. So December 9th, 2004, we're going to watch them do Boulevard of Broken Dreams.
A song from their album American Idiot, which just got 7 Grammy nominations. Please welcome Green Day.
Well, I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known.
On The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
And Tosh.0.
Daniel
Tosh.
This is 5 years before Tosh.0.
So he was just the comedic.
He was the B block guest who did like stand up.
We got our first appearance of Jason White.
Yes.
Who was in Pinhead Gunpowder?
He was in Pinhead Gunpowder, yeah.
Yep.
Not only Jason White, we also have a couple of other dudes in this.
Oh, we sure do.
So we have Jason White, who's on second guitar, and he becomes with the band the rest of their career, right?
Still, yeah.
And then Josh Freese's brother, I believe.
Oh, Jason Freese?
Jason Freese is on keys here.
Yeah. He's the pork pie hat wearing guy.
Okay, so Alex, what? Are those like timpanis in the
back?
They
are definitely timpanis.
They're timpanis. Okay. Why do they have timpanis?
they don't need them. That's for sure.
He's playing them with his hands. Did you see this?
No, he's definitely.
I don't think he has mallets. I think he's slamming timpanis with his hands. Yes. We'll watch it moving forward. I'm pretty confident.
Well, I mean, so a timpani is going to add so little to this. Like, what's the point?
It's so strange.
But we do get some really good shots of him singing backups.
Yeah.
Where he looks so dramatic because he's lit from the bottom.
Yeah. Well, also the keys guy, Freese, and the timpani guy have matching outfits. Like, they're like a pair.
Okay.
They're like a traveling salesman duo of timpani and keys backup for some reason. I don't know why. They both have, like, bowler hats or something on and a red suit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Billy Joe looking a little prime 2004 emo here. Ryan, how are you describing Billy's look at this point? How's it vibing with
you? A little disheveled, a little gothy.
Yeah, a little gothy.
Totally. A little gothy.
Yeah. Suit jacket. They kind of all have suit jacket. This is a big thing. They're going to be serious and professional now. Oh. They're going to wear suits.
This is another thing that I've talked about is once everyone shows up dressed up like they're not themselves is when I start to be like, ugh, what's happening with this band?
They're playing like there's a character.
It reflects.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, like, no, no, no.
It was a very conscious decision. They talked about wanting to get dressed up for all of these anymore.
Yeah.
Like you said, Jason White's on here. He was like a friend of Green Day. He was in the When I Come Around video.
Oh, really?
I did not know that.
Like you said, he joined Pinhead Gunpowder after the departure of the other guitarist who was in that. I do think, you know, whatever you feel about the song, you can't deny Billy Joe's voice, man. His voice sounds great.
They pull this off. I don't like it, but they do it.
Yeah. I mean, right. How did you feel about, you said you loved this record when it came out.
Yeah, when it came out, I thought it was great. I don't know if I saw this performance when it came out.
Well, how about this? This was a massive song, right? This is a huge top five charting single. How did you relate to this as like, you know, older fan Green Day now when it came out?
I think I was like, this is so cool. They're back on the radio.
Yeah.
But it's not my favorite song. It's not my favorite song on the record.
Yeah.
But it was a big to do.
But you didn't watch this and be like, ugh.
No.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm like living in Alston. Wait, I was in JP at the time and like just hanging out at a dive bar, talking with my friends about how much we still love Green Day at the time. Like,
yeah.
You know.
I this is definitely down there on my American Idiot songs. I think it's, I mean, it's kind of, this song in particular is a little pretty crazy departure, but they do it extremely well.
Yeah, the mid-tempo rock. Yeah. It's it's very much that.
Check my vital signs. And he checks it. He's actually checking his pulse when he sings that. Nope.
But there's a theatrics. There's theatrics to it.
Yes, there and definitely
like,
is.
They're playing into that and the live show at this time.
Yeah.
These huge fucking arenas. And they're like massive performances.
Right.
And you think about it, it's like three guys. Four.
Now four, yeah.
And but really like eight.
We went from three to eight pretty quickly then.
But like they had everybody eating out of their hands.
Yeah.
And everyone was like there and doesn't show the scope, but he runs like a football field
the
every
DVD.
Show.
Was it Bullet in a Bible? Is that what that concert they put out?
I don't know.
It's really cool to see them play during this because they do really do like a big fucking rock show for it.
It's bonkers.
Yeah, which for me, I liked Green Day because they weren't that. You know what we were talking about? Like, Welcome to Paradise, that first clip? That was the appeal.
But they were playing arenas pretty
quickly. They're the eighth graders.
Quickly.
Do you know what I mean? And this is so different.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying they didn't earn this, but for me, it's hard for me to feel the same way about it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree.
I get that.
But I think also just, we've talked about this on the show a number of times, you have to give them credit for coming out of warning and then coming up with this whole concept and this thing and it just exploding and doing it. Yeah. Like, it's impressive, you know, even if it's not your favorite thing in the world, it's really impressive.
Really extended their career.
Even though I still feel like the whole like anti-George Bush political thing of this on this record is like, okay, whatever. Like it's pretty overblown when you listen to it. And even like someone like Mike would be like, yeah, we cared about it, sort of, you know, like Billy Joe. This is a huge thing. Mike's like, yeah, I mean, like, we just want to change the world through rock and roll, man. And I was like, okay. Good luck with that.
Yeah. They wouldn't have been allowed to get away with not having much nuance.
Yeah.
Nowadays. Well, but.
No. He says it's Trey's birthday.
Oh.
And I looked it up. It is.
Cool.
December 9th is his birthday. I think American Idiot, I generally give it a thumbs up still to this day. I don't mind it too much.
I think I need to revisit in a more serious way.
Well, you could have done that for this episode, but, you know, that was kind of the point, but it's fine.
And then Green Day stops existing, right?
Yeah. That's basically yeah. I mean, in some ways.
And then they were swallowed up by the void, and we don't want to talk about it.
They had a lot of different smaller projects, and you know they're on tour, and they're one of the biggest.
Foxborough Hot Tubs.
Which I love that record.
The Network.
I do not love The Network.
Like you said, 21st Century Breakdown.
Terrible record.
Not very good. Yeah. But some people might
this
say.
This is the lightning round takes.
I mean, some Green Day fans might say that's the last one they like. I don't know. I think some people feel that way. I'm not sure.
I stop here.
Yeah.
I got Revolution Radio. I just pre-ordered the new record, but like, I don't have Uno Dos Tres. Father of All Motherfuckers. I don't even know.
The funny thing, too, is like, so 21st Century Breakdown comes out 5 years later, and they say it's another concept album / rock opera.
It felt pretty similar.
Really? You're doing this again?
Yep.
Why? Just make a record.
But it felt that way. It felt that way. We're like, we don't need to do this.
But it's not even the way they describe it. They clearly didn't put any thought into it.
Yeah.
He says, Armstrong has described the album as, quote, a snapshot of the era in which we live as we question and try to make sense of the selfish manipulation going on around us, whether it be the government, religion, media, or frankly, any form of authority.
Cool.
Just word salad muddled concept.
That's like
nonsense. I wrote about society.
I wrote some songs about things and about things that happen and dates and places and people I know.
But you know what? That album did reach number one. Somehow, I don't know. I listened to a few of it. It was I don't think.
What was the single from that?
21st Century Breakdown.
He goes real high pitched.
And there was another one that I recognized when I re-listened to it. What's it called? It was like the next track on it. Know Your Enemy. That was the first single. Know Your Enemy. It's not. It's pretty bad. But then I did listen. I'd never listened to that run of those three albums. The No Dos Tres. There is like one good album.
Exactly.
There's a lot of stuff, though.
But there's a lot of filler.
Yes. Yeah. No, ton. But I did text you, Alex. Track two on Dose.
Dose is the better of the three.
Yeah, and that sounded like kind of garagey.
But it's not enough to warrant.
No. But track two on that was called like Fuck Times or something.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what
I think it's Fuck Time.
Yeah, Fuck Time. He's like,
Fuck Time.
And it's like a little garage, like 60s tune, being like, It's fuck time.
Well, that is a thing that creeps in here, is this like rock and roll thing.
Yes.
It, like Billy Joe and, you know, Foxborough Hot Tub certainly was rock and roll. But you start to notice it. And certainly that single that you sent me the other day that they just put out kind of has this thing to it.
I think the new record might be good.
I think it
might be good too. But they've got this like rock and roll Beach Boys kind of like thing.
Yes. Well, on those Uno Dos Tres albums,
yeah,
there is. It's like, I told you, it's like late 60s, like garage.
Totally.
Band.
Yeah.
It's weird. But it's not terrible. Because you know what? No matter what, you still have Billy Joe's voice.
Yeah.
And that makes it everything kind of not terrible if unmemorable.
What
you know?
Year was the iHeartRadio Fest thing?
So I have this in my notes. We'll quickly talk about it. On September 21st, 2012,
okay,
during a performance at Las Vegas iHeartRadio Music Festival, Armstrong became agitated on stage and stopped the band's set midway through the performance of Basket Case in an expletive-filled rant. Armstrong criticized the event promoters for allegedly cutting short the band's performance and smashing his guitar and running off stage. And like the next day he goes to like rehab.
Yeah.
And this was in the middle of Uno Dos Tres. It was like they were putting a dose like a month later,
right,
or something. Yeah. And then he goes to rehab and he goes up and down with his sobriety, I guess. I'm not sure exactly. You guys know
I think he's still sober.
I think he's still sober. Yeah.
That
yeah,
newest
yeah.
song actually was about.
I'm pretty right. sure. Yeah, I think he's like fairly established in it sobriety now.
But yeah, he talked about like in this time he was taking a lot of pills and medicating himself and drinking.
Sounded pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know any of that shit until this week. But then the only other note before we jump into the final clip of the day, in 2014, Armstrong joined the Replacements for a number of shows.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Beginning on April 19th at Coachella. Frontman Paul Westerberg had been suffering with back problems and spent the majority of the gig lying on a sofa while Armstrong helped play his parts. Is that crazy? Westerberg just sprawled out.
Laying on a sofa.
Like, wow. That's singing Bastards of Young while Billy Joe like dances in front of him or something.
Smoking a cigarette, ashing on the floor.
that was crazy. But yeah, so let's talk about the final clip, which is they put out, like you referenced, Ryan, Revolution Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. It is fine. The record is fine. I listened to it for the first time this week. It is not offensive.
Nope.
It's the thing we had about Rancid, too. They never get particularly offensive, Green Day. It's not good.
Yeah.
But it's not offensive.
This rocks.
Yeah. This one, I'm not. It's okay. Let's watch it. November 22nd, 2016. They're doing Bang Bang on our favorite, James Corden. Our boy.
Yes.
Our favorite boy, James Corden. I will say, at least it does.
Our favorite boy.
I need
boy.
To give a shout out here, at least. It opens with Reggie Watts.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a huge Comedy Bang Bang fan. It's nice to see Reggie here. He does good work on this show. Reggie's great. It's not his fault that he's on James Corden.
Yeah.
But yeah, the very cordial crowd behind Corden clapping as he introduces Green Day. It's very polite.
Yeah.
Very polite collection of people. and they're going to do Bang Bang, which is, hey, Reggie Watts, Comedy Bang Bang. Bang Bang, the song.
Yeah.
It's just something. That's something.
The beginning almost sounds like Four Leaf Clover by the old 97s, if anyone wants to.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, Billy looking pretty Elvis. A little young Elvis vibe here.
Trey's got the eyeliner on heavy.
Yeah. And then, God, the stage. The insane little light. What is going
it's
on
too
with
much.
The, it's too much. What is going on with this? It's so silly. I couldn't. I've like, it's kind of like, need like a, you know, warning, a warning sign for the light setup on this.
You don't think this rocks?
No.
It's pretty rocking.
I don't know. I think Trey looks kind of bored.
Yeah, I mean, they all look... I mean, it's all...
It's not bad. It's not bad.
It's too polished. Like, it's a...
Well, that's the thing where I was talking about all these records now.
Yeah.
They sound so digital.
And yes.
Like,
yeah.
Everything
yeah, yeah.
sounds perfect. Yeah. And, like, it just... You know what it reminded me of? Was, like, later era, like, Against Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like a vibe, at least. You know what I mean? I think Against Me, Later Against Me is like better than this.
Yes, I agree. But there's something about when you become too good as a band, the products, it's like, oh, you've just executed this so well that I'm not enjoying it. And like, I think what really appealed about early Green Day was like, holy shit, look how tight they are, but they're just bad enough and just sloppy enough for it to be impressive what they're pulling off.
Or you thought that you looked at them and think they were sloppy, but
of course it sounds like this because they're...
Yeah. Well, they have a number, we didn't even talk about, they have Jason White, but there's also a couple of... We have Keys again.
There's a just backup singer.
Is there really just a backup singer?
In the back there, there's a guy.
Yeah.
He's like literally just holding it like a tambourine and sings backup every now and
then.
Yeah,
I wrote like the bridge is some classic Green Day vibes. Yeah. It sounded nice. It just feels kind of paint by numbers in a way that's not particularly fun.
Yeah.
That's all, you know? And I listened to other, this little Egyptian breakdown here. Like, me, new, 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 new. I was like, what? Why are you doing that?
Well, you got to do something.
Yeah.
You got a lot of bridges to write, man. We've been around for a long time. What are you going to do here? I don't know. Egyptian breakdown.
Oh, and Mike looking like jacked as hell.
Oh, yeah.
He's also...
Mike looks fucking jacked.
He's also... A vest has entered the chat.
Oh, that's a sleeveless cutoff shirt.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
That's
I didn't want to give him a...
He's still punk. He's cutting the sleeves off of those shirts.
Of button-down shirts.
Oh, yeah.
I saw some... This is totally unrelated, but it was Billy Joe talking about the fashion of punks, and it was like punks that wear like big baggy shorts and stuff, and he was like, dress like an adult. Get some jeans and some like,
get a job.
Yeah, like get some some tight pants and like some chukkas, like,
yeah.
We just missed Trey's little mini drum solo.
Well, yeah. We saw it was cool,
but we didn't talk about it.
Oh, well, he didn't look particularly enthused while doing
it. I tell you, Trey looks so bored on this clip, dude. He does not look into it.
I mean, they all kind of look like that. It's just kind of like, yeah, we're tired.
Well, also, I think this was the comeback from him out of rehab, and like, he's sober now, and they're just trying to get their feet back, you know, under them.
Yeah.
James with like the like
that was so incredible.
Corden's child on Christmas morning energy is the worst, is what I wrote down.
Yeah.
I can't handle James Corden, dude. But yeah, all right. So let's quickly move on because we need to get Ryan out of here. He has a life. We don't have lives, Alex. Ryan has a life.
No, you have lives.
I don't have a life. I got nothing. So, very quickly, they put out another record, Father of All Motherfuckers.
I mean, that's just a contract record. That was, they needed to get that.
Did you listen to this?
It sucks.
It's like a dance. It sounds like The Killers almost.
Yeah, I mean.
It's weird.
They've got too much time on their hands or something. I don't know.
They wanted out of their record contract, and they had to put out a record to get out of it because they wanted to put their own stuff out because they saw how the music industry was working, and they're not getting a lot of money.
They're like, we don't need to be a part of the machine anymore.
If we put it out ourselves, we'll make more money. And that's what they ended up doing with the new record. But they were just like, let's fucking write
some nonsense.
Nonsense songs, put the record out, go on tour, make a couple bucks, and then move on and make a real fucking record again.
Mm. That sounds about right.
And that's
after
what
listening
doing.
To that, that makes sense.
The new singles. And
this new one that's coming out, Saviors. I sent you the single that came out 2 days ago or whatever. It sounded pretty
good. Still haven't heard it. I'll listen to it on the
way. It sounds good.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. The other ones, it's like, is another one like in a Taco Bell ad right now or something?
It is. It's crazy to see that.
Yeah.
I'm like, Green Day's in a fucking Taco Bell commercial? Okay. Yeah.
And if you listen to it, it sounds a little like older school Green Day.
That feels like some overlap of interests you have.
Oh, it's perfect for me.
Yeah.
Like Green Day and Taco Bell? Yeah.
I mean, a Taco Bell with Green Day is like, whoa, it's like.
But yeah, I wonder if this record, this new one that's going to come out next year is like, good.
They've got like 18 different variants of vinyl styles.
Oh, I hate that.
I hate that too.
But I mean, at least, I don't know.
But they're all selling out. So like, people are buying this record thinking it's going
to
be big.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested to hear it. Like, especially after that single that came out 2 days ago. It was like this little drop D action for Green Day.
Yeah, it's got like a couple different hooks in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what it reminded me a little bit? Jimmy Eat World. Had some Jimmy Eat World vibes to it.
Yeah.
It sounded pretty good. We'll see. All right. Well, we talked about Green Day.
We did.
Any final thoughts on Green Day, Ryan?
I love Green Day, and I love watching their evolution.
Mm.
And even though not everything grabs me and pulls me in, there's something about them that I'm just drawn to. And I think it's them as people, and knowing that they're like, they're kind of fucking cool.
Yeah.
Like they own a coffee company in Oakland, and they own like a bar, and they like, they're
named after a Clash song.
And they just kind of like are cool Barkle. Guys.
Rudy Can't Fail, I think.
I have no idea what it's called.
I think it is Rudy Can't Fail. Final thoughts from you, Alex, on the band Green Day?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that neither Mike or Trey have done anything.
Mike has been, he has a few other bands that have, like, the Frustrators was a thing he was in for a while. Okay. That's the guys, oh God, it's going to break my brain. The guys from the Frustrators were in a different band, and then Mike saw them and was like, I want to be in a band with you. And they did the Frustrators.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's just punky.
It's interesting to me that, like, you know, Billy Joe is clearly the creative soul of this band, right? But I would love to see those two players, just as a bass player and as a drummer, those guys put a stamp on someone else's stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that someday.
Trey must have been on a bunch of different records.
No? I don't think he has.
I don't think he has.
Really?
That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know?
He doesn't go the Travis Barker route.
Or like Taylor Hawkins from Foo Fighters, who was on everything. And Josh Freese is on everything. Trey just does Green Day, and so does Mike, right?
Well, they also have their cover band. Their old guy cover band.
Oh, yeah. What's that called again?
I don't remember the name. I probably should have written that down. But like, they'll just play in Oakland in a park for like 400 people, and it's just them doing like Kinks songs.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Actually, I mean, you know what kept showing up is them, when I was doing this, was them playing at their high school.
Oh yeah.
Videos.
And it's like, oh my God, they were already Green Day.
Yeah. There is that one particular clip of, like, you know, them being like 17. There's that one girl standing at the front of the stage kind of nodding her head into it. Everyone else is not, you know, ignoring it. And they're like, they sound like Green Day.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And I think if you were in high school and you were like, what? is that guy Billy Joe? Yeah. What the fuck?
Like singing perfectly.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you have final thoughts?
Yeah, do you have final thoughts on Green Day?
You know, not really.
Cool.
I think I just basically love Green Day.
Yeah.
I always have. I think I'm always going to be interested in hearing them put out new stuff. I've never become too cynical or too sort of something like Weezer, which we've talked about ad nauseum as the first band we ever covered.
Yeah.
A band that defined my high school experience. And Green Day did in different ways for me. It wasn't as obsessive as I was with Weezer.
Right.
But, and I don't know if that's why I can still to this day engage with like modern day Green Day in a way that doesn't upset me in a way that Weezer actively makes me uncomfortable. And I don't, that's just my own thing of how emotionally invested I was in Rivers Cuomo or whatever.
I think Weezer had something to do with that too.
Yeah, no, right. Exactly.
They made some moves.
And I still think to this day, like Green Day, it was one of the things where sometimes like Coldplay, like, oh fuck, I have to listen to Coldplay this week, which I definitely did have last episode.
Yeah.
And today I was like, this week or the past couple weeks, I was like, yay, I get to listen to Green Day.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
I think I'm going to go continue to listen to Green Day.
Yeah, that's right. did you guys get the box set of Dookie, the 30th anniversary?
No, I eyed it. I want to hear it. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this.
So last thing I'll say is me and Adam from Me and Capri's were talking about it. And he was like, the demos are fucking crazy.
I heard,
like,
the demos. Yeah.
I was like,
I'm not
going to listen to it until the box set comes. And then I listened to it and we're talking about it. It is a look inside the mind of a creative genius figuring out these songs.
Are they like acoustic demos or?
Some are acoustic, some are full band, but like Basket Case is a different song. And then you hear.
The melody is
the same or similar.
The structure.
The structure is different. The lyrics are different. It is a different song. And then how do they get to what they got? You kind of see.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like I shouldn't have that. But I'm fucking glad that I do.
It's like, you know, it's the same thing that everyone, like every Beatles fan is obsessed with. It's just, you know, Green Day gets to enter that level of analysis as a fandom, you know?
That's cool.
I love listening to Beatles demos of something from the White Album a year before. And like, how did they go through this process? Like, Green Day
does
have
some live shows with that box set too, right?
There sure are.
Like, good. Like, scorching.
It's got the whole Woodstock 94.
Yep.
And then it has the European tour when Dookie came out.
Yeah.
And it's like they were playing clubs.
Right.
And they played a venue in Wormelschlagen. And I've been to this place and they played this. That was the last club. The day after that, they're like, we're going to stadiums.
Right. Their manager was like, Dookie is blowing up in ways you never could have imagined.
This little tiny club that they,
240,
440, whatever it was.
Yeah.
We're done. Tomorrow you're playing a literal football stadium.
And that's the live set that's on the...
No, it's the football stadium.
Oh, okay.
But they're fucking... This is the at their best.
Yeah. Cool.
That's awesome. All right, well, Ryan, we have one quick little segment to play.
Okay.
And then we're going to end the show. Okay?
Okay.
And so I figured, in honor of Ryan, you know, someone that has booked many a show and many a venue in the city of Boston, we're going to play a game called Guess the Venue.
Ooh, okay.
And the way this game is working is I have pulled mostly negative Yelp reviews.
Great.
For venues around Boston. And Alex and Ryan Perfect. Will compete to name what the Yelp review is describing, which venue it is.
Okay.
We will start with Ryan as our guest.
Okay. But you said that we're making eye contact with me, which was very strange.
Because I was going to start with you, and I thought, no. there are a couple venues here that don't exist anymore.
Okay, so we're old stuff too.
There's a few, mostly around, there's a couple that don't exist anymore.
Okay.
All right, let's read the first review here. I went there for a drink on Friday night with a friend. I've heard raving reviews about this place for their music atmosphere, but I got a totally negative vibe. I came with one friend and she ordered food. However, I just wanted a drink. The waitress, who I think was the owner maybe, gave me a nasty look and gave us terrible service after that because I didn't want a $5 falafel that looked like something you can buy on the street in New York City. What is the venue?
The Middle East.
It is the Middle East.
Yeah. The falafel gave it away. I have no idea. Then he said falafel, and I was like, nope.
We're going to the Middle East on Thursday, which for the first time I will have been there in 5 years, I think. We were seeing Piebald on Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
Which is exciting. But yeah, we haven't been in the Middle East forever. And obviously they've had their own fucked up issues and kind of surprised it's still going on, but Piebald's playing a show there, so we're going to go.
Yep.
Aaron, who's the booker there, is doing great work.
Awesome. Yep. Good. All right, you ready?
I think so.
All right, here we go. Next venue. Highly recommended for going to a concert as the stage is small and personal. You won't have any trouble seeing your favorite performers up close. It's cash only with an ATM inside, and the bathroom is located awkwardly next to the stage.
Great Scott.
The Great Scott. R.I.P.
ATM.
One of, probably next to OB's, our most important venue in the city.
I miss it.
That was my favorite room.
Yeah. You booked a lot of shows there.
Yeah, but I mean, it was my favorite place to see a show.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah. Do you have any shows that come to mind for the Great Scott you'd want to shout out, or just...
No. it was just a great, great place. I did many shows there I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
The first New Warden show with No More Black.
Yeah. There I played one of my first shows ever with Wits Band. One of them was at Great Scott.
Yeah.
It was always, I think I only got to play there a few times, but every time it was very special. You get a chance to play there. It was the best. So is the saga of it coming back in some form officially dead, Ryan? Do you know?
Or? No clue. I have no updates. I wish I could shed any light.
Because it seemed like it got close there for a minute and then fell back down. All right, next one. Ryan, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I have problems with this venue? Easy. The sound sucks. The fact that house speakers are a good 3 feet from the stage means you have to choose between being up close to the band and seeing and getting atmosphere, or sit back and lose atmosphere, but possibly get a better sound experience.
Jesus.
What do you think?
TT's?
No.
Brighton Music Hall.
Brighton Music Hall. Wow. All right.
I was going to guess that too.
So you had this experience as well.
I've had that room sound amazing. I've been in there when it sounds like
what
bands are underwater.
Why is it?
It's so strange. It's really hit or miss. Yeah.
I feel like the problem we've had is like it's too bassy, right?
That's the underwater.
And the guitar.
Effect. Yeah.
The guitar doesn't come through. I've had this we saw Cloud Nothings there.
Yeah.
Remember that show?
I don't think I went to that show.
Oh, it sounded so bad for Cloud Nothings.
Yeah.
But I have seen, like Ryan said, other shows there where it sounds great. I don't know. All right. Well, Ryan leads 2-1. But
we haven't done it. It's not even.
He wants me to know that you're
All right, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
As I was walking out, a 130-pound skinny little bouncer shouted, "Hey, dickhead," to me and bolted after me and tried to grab a cup of water by force. I shrugged him off and he started shouting profanities and threatening me while I laughed in his face. Highly unprofessional. Why would you call a patron a dickhead? My friend who likes to pick up hipster girls who feel vulnerable because they're totally underserviced swears by this place. How I personally would never come here again. First of all, can you believe that? First of all,
I'm processing.
I was like, I have to read this. This is actually a thing that exists on the internet that someone fucking wrote this on. Like,
is this O'Brien's?
Fuck no, it's not O'Brien's.
I thought it could have been O'Brien's because I would have been the person. Hey, dickhead, you bring a cup of water outside.
But I would have chosen this review for O'Brien's. Are you kidding me?
I don't know.
No, it's not O'Brien's. It's actually one that has already been said out loud just for us to move the game along.
Already been said out loud. Oh, TT's.
It's TT the Bears. Hipster girls who are underserviced.
I don't like
you
that.
You wrote that on the internet.
I don't like it.
You wrote that on the internet, dude. Don't write that on the internet.
I give his bad review a bad review.
Yeah, that's a negative review for me. Yeah.
TT's, I mean...
It's a no for me, dog.
Hey, I still kind of miss TT's, even though it was gross as fuck. I
still haven't been to Sonya.
I saw... Yeah. Future of the Left at TT's.
Fucking
saw
awesome.
Joyce Manor open up for Lemuria on the floor at TT's.
Who booked that show?
Was that you?
It was me.
Oh,
of course
God.
It was.
I didn't really... I mean, that Joyce Manor show is...
That was actually a tough show. We didn't get a good turnout, and all the other shows that...
I turned out.
We had done, were really big, and this was like, here's the base guarantee, I'm sorry.
Damn. That was the first time we ever saw Joyce Manor.
Yeah.
They set the drums up on the floor.
Yeah.
They fucking killed it. They were so good.
They were so good.
They were mad at me because the show was 18 plus, and they had 2 17-year-old friends who couldn't get in.
Really? Well, they were really good, and now they're
Boo
still
fucking
a good band.
Who?
I was like, be older, idiots. Like,
I still think that's one of the bigger, like... when I saw them bands at that TT show.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they really like surprised the hell out of me at that show.
Alex.
Yes.
Next review. Genuinely terrible views if you don't buy a floor ticket. It's criminal that they even sell so many mezzanine tickets. Genuinely terrible views if you don't buy a floor ticket.
The mezzanine.
What are you saying? It's criminal that they sell so many mezzanine because the view is so bad from the mezzanine.
That's yeah, no, I'm trying to...
Oh, I know what it is.
Is this House of Blues?
It has to be.
It is House of Blues.
Yeah.
House of Blues.
It does suck up on the sides there. You can't see shit.
I will never.
I think it's my least favorite venue. Yeah. I pray I never have to go again.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a while. And now with Roadrunner.
Oh, Roadrunner is a perfect venue.
There's no point in going to House of Blues at this point.
Nope.
The venue is pretty grungy. Not that there's anything wrong with that. The layout is not very good. It feels 3 or 4 times as wide as deep, making for awkward viewing from most spots. There's a balcony of sorts, but a lot of it is fenced off and reserved for elites.
Paradise.
The Paradise.
Yep.
Man, I still have a soft spot for the Paradise.
I have no problem with the Paradise.
Like, I know the polls. I know the problems.
Well, you know what you're getting into.
I have a problem with the views in the Paradise. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you go to a really packed show at the Paradise,
it's tough.
It's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah.
If it's not, it's still super fun. Yeah. And you have to, it's a Boston legendary venue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that. I still have a very soft spot for the Paradise. I'll never give it up. Ready, Alex?
I'm ready.
I've stopped keeping score because you guys are getting all these right. I'm just doing, I'm just doing it for fun.
Yeah.
The issue is this venue forces the acts to do an abbreviated show so they can turn it into a shitty dance club at 10 p.m.
Royale.
The Royale. We saw Piebald there a few times.
I've seen a bunch of good shows there.
Yeah. I mean, they do sometimes put on... I don't know. I've had pretty good experiences at the Royal, except the drinks are super fucking expensive. That's all I remember at the Royal, mostly.
I personally, I'm like, done by 10? Love it.
Love it.
Like, great.
Well, that's because you guys are old as fuck.
Get out of here, guy.
All right. Last one. You ready, Al? Ready, Ryan?
I'm ready.
You're not Alex. You're Ryan.
I'm Ryan.
Pretty tiny, a faint odor of sweat and beer, ear-splittingly loud bands where members of the next band are standing in the crowd next to you, waiting for their turn and appreciating the act on stage. Drinks were pretty cheap, and we managed to get a fair few of them in us, served up by the solid bartenders. Squeezed in shoulder to shoulder is one of those moments where you really get something that you for some reason never could. I got punk, and I have this venue to thank for that. Needless to say, my buddy had a blast, and his Boston experience was complete.
It's not a negative review.
It's the only positive one I chose.
It's O'Brien's.
It's O'Brien's.
O'Brien's.
I mean, I read that and I was like, that is a really nice...
Yeah, that's lovely.
Lovely description of Ryan's O'Brien's. The fact that something I could never get, I got punk. I was like, dude, yeah.
Ryan's
all the
O'Brien's.
Bands standing on stage watching the other bands. I mean, it was O'Brien's.
And Tyler's doing a fucking great job over there now.
Yeah.
And it's a different thing, and I love that. It's not... what I did, he made it his own place, and that's like what I wanted for it.
Yeah,
I'm glad it's
totally
working out.
Yeah, no, and as much as we miss the Ryan days at O'Brien's, and but we can never capture our youth, Alex.
Yeah,
I want
time
keep,
moves.
I want to go back to O'Brien's more. I should do that.
You should.
Yeah, we should.
You should.
Yeah.
Well, that was Guess the Venue. I'm gonna say Ryan won.
Yeah,
is that okay?
Tie. Solid tie because we got them all right.
You did get.
We
them
did
all
it
right.
together.
Yeah. That was fun. I know the producer Hank's giving us the wrap-up single. He's getting antsy. So let's wrap it up. Don't take your headphones off. We're not actually done yet, Ryan, for the end of the show. Jesus. Well, Ryan, we can't thank you enough for joining us. What a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
It was so fun to have you.
I'm very hungover still. So like,
we
this
didn't even
was
mention
fun...
the fact that you were at Encore last night celebrating
you're
a friend's
at Encore?
Birthday. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, Alex was working.
I was.
And I was just being an adult. not doing anything.
We're all being adults in our own way.
But I don't know. You talk about Faces a little bit before we end.
Faces is great.
Yeah.
50 Pleasant Street, Malden. 5-minute walk from the Orange Line. Live music when I want to do it or we make sense. It makes sense. So it's not every day, but their shows are good. Shows are great.
Pretty much every weekend.
Pretty much every weekend.
Yeah.
We're a little I'm a little lighter in the winter right now because I just want to be.
Yep. Mm.
But the staff is incredible. The food's amazing. The music's great. Come check it out.
What's coming up next?
Yeah.
We have the Jittery Jack. Christmas party with Deke Dickerson and Pledge Pins on the 16th.
This is coming out on the 17th.
And then the Ox holiday show on the 23rd. The Ox is Mike Nevin. He does a Christmas band. It's him, all Christmas songs. And we have Adam from Me and Capri's, Eggie Benedict, and Gia Green opening. It's going to be be a party. $10. Come hang out. Have a couple beers. Spill them on the floor. We'll clean it up.
I'm going to that. I'm going to that.
Spill them on the floor. We'll clean them up. I like that.
Well, Faces rules. We've talked about it on the show before. I'm so glad I have it. So glad as someone who's north of the river,
I can 20 minutes
shoot over to that place and still go and see you and see so many people we've, our friends that we went to shows with in our 20s and 30s in Austin. It's still there. You're still putting on great music. And we love you, man. Thank you.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. You can follow us on Instagram at TMGTpod. You can email us at TMGTpod@gmail.com. Rate, review, subscribe to the show.
Do it.
Do it already. And Alex, anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Well, what a fun little ep. Merry Christmas. And we know we'll be back next time with another grab bag.
Yeah.
Get ready for a little GB ep coming up next time. I'm not going to spoil the theme yet. You probably could guess what it is. and until then, we love you all. See ya.
Thank you, Ryan.
Schlong, yeah.